All right, everybody in, we have a couple connecting to audio. Okay, I'd like to call the October 13, 2020 Newtown Borough Council meeting to order. Please join me in a moment of silence, followed by the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mary Gonzalez, we're sharing your screen. You need to take it down.
I'm not sure how that's...
Mary?
Oh, yes. Can we remove the screen joining capability?
That's Mary's screen, I think. It's Mary Gonzalez.
Judy, can you make me a co-host? This is Valentina. I'll do it. I can take the screen off.
Well, let me see. I'm a co-host too, so let me see if I can get rid of her. I'm sorry. Stop participants sharing. Okay. All right. I got it.
All right. Thank you. I'm not sure what happened there, but. Okay. Prior to our meeting, we did have an executive session to discuss personnel matters. Are there any amendments to the agenda?
I have one. Under C of A's, we need to delete 2020-042 that was approved at the special meeting on September 24th.
And okay. Tara, the Bucks County Planning Commission's on our call. And I was hoping we could move them forward in the agenda so that they don't have to do our whole meeting.
Sure. I'm good with that. And is that with the bike trails?
Yeah, correct.
Yes. Okay, great. All right. Let's have our mayor's report and our police report. And then Sue, are you okay with moving that up of the county up prior to HARB?
Sure.
Okay, thanks. All right. And thank you to all the HARB applicants for waiting for our out of town guest. We appreciate it. Okay. Mr. Mayor.
We want to do public to be heard first.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Public to be heard. Anyone? Okay. All right. Now on to you.
Okay. Thank you, Council President. We have a special event request. Would like to have someone make a motion to approve live music at Pickering Field, adhering to all CDC, state, and county guidelines on Friday, November the 6th, 2020 at 5 p.m. and from what I understand now ending around 6:30. Sponsored by Bill Davis, a Love for Life, and rain date is Sunday, November the 8th, 2020, at 5 p.m. And I'm assuming also concluding around 6:30. So If I could have someone make that motion.
So moved.
Have a second.
Second.
Second. All right, we have a motion. Second. Any questions or discussion? We have Mr. Davis is joining us.
Yes, I'm on the line.
Yeah, hi. Bill, do you have any comments, anything to share about the event?
Sure, we're really trying to keep it just a local event, having folks come within walking distance. We're obviously gonna follow all the guidelines we need to. The idea is obviously to socially distance. We're happy to follow any suggestions that you might have. I know there are other events that have taken place on the Pickering Manor field. So whether we put a little stake in the ground or we spray paint something, whatever makes the most sense to make sure that we're keeping everybody aware and distant, and we're following the guidelines for sure. And we are, I'm in the process of looking at the insurance situation. I do have a contact and an insurance company that at this point will be covering, I believe will be covering us. If there's any company that you've worked with in the past that you could recommend, I'd certainly be willing to give them a call as well.
I'm not sure if we're actually allowed to do that, but we'll check, we'll follow up with you. We'll check with our, you know, with actually our solicitors here. We can just ask, are we allowed to make a recommendation for companies we've used for insurance or that other people have used for insurance?
I don't think there's any problem letting them know who our broker is. You're not, if that's what Mr. Davis is asking. I don't
think somebody that he can use for insurance for an event.
Yeah, I don't think there's a problem. And since they insure the borough, it may be a little bit less expensive for them. So there's not a problem with letting them know who we're using. We're not making a recommendation. We're just telling you who we use.
Absolutely understood.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks. And we can share that. I was thinking more of like other people who are out there, and I didn't want to promote one over the other.
Carol?
Sure.
We just had an event there a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So those folks provided insurance. We could provide that information to Mr. Davis.
Mm-hmm. You're right, because that's also a sort of public field, information. So.
Same situation. So those people provided insurance. We could provide that name to Mr. Davis.
Yeah. All right. So we'll follow up with you with that. And hopefully that will be helpful then. And
good.
If you have any procedures, I don't know that we want to, need to spray paint the grass, but communicating is important to the attendees. Chief, do you have any recommendations for Mr. Davis?
No, just, as long as he maintains social distance. I'm not sure how many people he's anticipating being at the event, but the event that took place on 9/11, that went very smoothly. People were social distancing. There really wasn't a need to put any kind of markings on the field per se. I don't know if we want to have spray paint on our ball field.
Yeah.
I'm
not sure if we want to do that to the grass.
We play it by ear and see if we require any kind of cones to go to direct people into certain portions of the field. But that wasn't needed at the prior event.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sarah?
So are there any other questions or comments?
There's no end time. There's no end time to the event.
6:30 was what I reported in the reading it. It's not written there, Bob,
okay.
But I did say that it would end approximately at 6:30.
Thank you.
That's correct. And again, I'm happy to do whatever makes the most sense, whether we cone everything off. Certainly we'll get there in enough time to prepare and then obviously to clean up and make sure everything's squared away afterwards as well.
Great.
Good. Thank you.
Sure. I appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you. All right. We've had a motion. We have a second. We've had discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Aye. Motion passes. All right. Thank you, Mr. Much. Davis.
Yep. I appreciate it. Again, thanks again.
Good luck with things.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The second thing is a Halloween scavenger hunt. Christine Edmonds and I had a discussion this afternoon. From that standpoint, it's going to be something that will be provided through applications that the people would make. There's going to be a set of rules possibly for the participant as well as for the parent or adult who's going to be working with it. And there will be prizes that will be given out, but there's nothing that is going to be done in a group setting or group being out doing this thing. And it's, something is to be done in conjunction with Halloween. So I don't believe Christine is on tonight, but she and I had a discussion. And again, it's not going to be anything that would require any application for, nor would it be anything that the police would be involved with. Unless anybody has any other questions, that's all I know at this time.
Mayor, do you have a date?
Right now they haven't finalized the date. They're working on it as close to Halloween so that they can give the prizes out at Halloween. And as far as I know, it's going to be probably a week-long scavenger hunt. So it'll probably be the week before Halloween, but Christine has not finalized those dates as of yet.
Okay. Thanks.
Do you happen to know, and I assume that it wouldn't be taking people onto other people's property to find things?
No. No, the things that she's talking about are leaves, you know, things, taking a picture of a skeleton in a bush, you know, and then sending it to a website so that that person can prove that they did it. Those are the types of things that she's talking about. Nothing that's going to be, you know, on taking things off of people's property or off the streets from that standpoint.
All right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
That's all I have, Council President. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, no, I have one more
thing. Oh, wait. Oh, no, you have a reminder.
Yeah,
yes.
We have a reminder of two things. One of them is the Halloween performance sponsored by the Bucks County Discoveries Dance and Theater Arts Company on Center Street, Center Avenue between State and Sycamore on Saturday, October 24th from 4 to 5 p.m. Rain date is October the 25th. And the other is...
Mr. Mayor, isn't that in Pickering? Didn't that get moved?
I don't know whether.
Yes, it is.
Yes, they got Pickering. It is on Pickering.
Fine.
I didn't even notice the write-up. Yeah, it's on Pickering.
Oh, it is. Thank you. So that is going to be at Pickering. And then the other thing is the window painting sponsored by the Newtown Mercantile Group. Everyone can get their sign-up sheets for that and come out and paint the windows of Newtown so that we have Halloween festivities that are social distance, but also on the windows. So that's all I have. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And the window painting date is?
Let me look that up. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. If you don't have that, I needed to look it up. So you don't, we know it's out there. So
it's on the borough website.
It's on the borough website.
Yeah.
Okay, find out. So Mr. Mayor, you and I can paint something. All right.
Right. Stick figures are not my strong point.
Spooky stick figures. All right. Chief?
I'm glad we clarified the Halloween performance on Center Ave because I didn't approve of that.
That was not what we voted on last time.
That I said that we can't close that portion of the highway, be too disruptive to traffic, and she was going to be looking for alternate location, so
mm-hmm.
An alternate location was found.
I'm the one who approved the agenda, and I was just like, oh yes, the Halloween BC Discovery, we already voted on that, and I didn't even pick it up till now, so I'm glad we
that's my fault for not making the work session. I could have voiced my, you know, not approving where they originally wanted it, so. But we were willing to work with them on finding another location.
And she agreed to Pickering, so we're good.
On the September, we handled a total of 167 calls for service. It was a relatively slow crime month. We had 4 retail thefts at the wine and spirit shop. That's a favorite spot. It was all by one individual, and we actually made an arrest on it. A 50-year-old woman out of Doylestown. So she was charged with all 4 violations. And she spread them out. It was a good job by one of our off-duty officers, saw her walking through town, notified the on-duty officer who, you know, went and spoke to her and were able to get a confession on the previous job. We're more gearing up for, you know, some events coming up. I know some members of council had inquired as far as a mobile rally that was to take place on October 17th. I just received word at about 5:00 tonight that the route has been changed and it now will be coming through the borough. It's on Saturday, October 17th. They're meeting at 10:00 at the Newtown Commons, and they'll be starting to pull out at 11:00. They'll be coming down Washington, making the left on State, right on Center, and continuing out. They're expecting, as of now, they have 283 vehicles that are supposed to be taking part in it, 597 additional people said that they were interested in it. So, and we'll be prepared for it. We're not anticipating any problems with it. October 24th, we're having another drug take back at the firehouse. This one, due to COVID, is going to be drop-off only, so people won't even have to exit their vehicles. They'll be able to just drive through the parking lot of the firehouse.
Oh, great.
I'm sorry.
Great. The drive-through. That's terrific. Thank you.
We had a meeting with the DA today, district attorney today, just to discuss contingency plans if there's any issues at any of the polling sites. The primary responsibility for security at the polling sites is, you know, placed on the constables. However, you know, we'll be aware, you know, be able to handle any contingencies if they're requesting us for any kind of assistance. The DA will have people being able to give legal advice as to, you know, particular action shouldn't be taken depending on the circumstances. So that's pretty much where we're at. So it's more, we're looking forward to things in the future. Last month was a good month, was relatively quiet.
Mm. All right, thank you so much, Chief.
Is the constable also responsible for outside the polling place? Because usually they tend to be kind of situated inside the polling place.
Right. We're not allowed, uniformed officers aren't allowed to be within 100 feet of the polling place. So we're just, you know, if it comes to anybody being disruptive and stopping anyone from entering, we have the ability to escort them into the polling place if need be. But as far as being stationed, we're not allowed to be within 100 feet of the polling place in uniform.
And the constable is supposed to handle that exterior portion.
That is correct. That's correct.
Question for the chief?
Yeah, Bob.
Of the 167 calls, were they predominantly traffic and parking?
Mostly traffic related. We did have an unfortunate circumstance. A gentleman took his own life. So we did have a suicide investigation. But for the most part, they were traffic. We did have quite a bit of vandalism, spray paint related, mostly dealing with signs, political signs, things along those lines.
You put up the speed sign up at State Street. Will that be coming down, or are we going to use that?
Apparently it's going to be coming down because I have a new request to put it on Frost. So we'll be moving it on to Frost.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Chief. One question. You said there's about 280 some vehicles for the parade on the 17th. How will that be navigated as far as the stoplights in town and other traffic?
The organizers have been told that they have to obey all motor vehicle laws. So if the light stops, they'll just have to catch up later. Mm-hmm. So yes, we're not providing any kind of traffic control, you know, giving them any kind of right of way through any of the stoplight intersections.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other question for Chief? All right. Thanks, Chief. All right, Nicole, I'm going to hand it over to you and Christian to talk about the trails. Thank you.
Thank you. So, tonight, Christian, are you with, or is it Paul? Is he here?
So it's actually me.
Oh, hi.
And Paul. So ooh, it's both of us.
Okay. All right, cool. So Christian Ragosh is here from Bucks County Planning Commission. We are going to be introducing a feasibility study that is basically a shared use trail to connect the Newtown area with the Delaware and Lehigh Trail at both Washington's Crossing and Yardley Borough. In the past, the borough has been, we are very favorable to these bike trails. So I'm hoping that what Christian and or Paul the information they give us tonight will hopefully be exciting for everyone. And thank you so much for coming.
Sure thing. So Nicole, do you want to share my screen or do you want me just to talk about what we have going on?
I can do that.
Wait. I can do this. Give me a second. My bad. Okay, slideshow.
I do have the main presentation, but I don't have the shortened version. There you go.
Okay, can you guys see my screen?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, cool. All right, so hi, everybody. My name is Christian Ragosh. I'm a transportation planner with the Bucks County Plan Commission, and my associate Paul Gordon is here as well. Emma's here to provide just a brief overview of this feasibility study we're going to be doing for the Newtown area, to try to see if we can connect the Newtown area over to the Delaware and Lehigh Canal Trail. So just what we're going to quickly talk about here is the purpose of the study, the steering committee, the goals and the objectives, the project funding and background, regional context, some project area maps, some field survey work, and just go over a feedback tool we made for the public to provide us feedback during this time. So it's basically, as we know, just the purpose of this is to find a way to find trail connections that could link Newtown over to the Delaware and Lehigh Canal towpath. The six municipalities that are involved in this feasibility study are Lower Makefield Township, Middletown Township, Newtown Borough, Newtown Township, Upper Makefield Township, and Yardley Borough. So to help us along with this process, we have a steering committee, which is comprised of individuals from each municipality participating in this study, and as well as the 9/11 Memorial Trail, the Pennsylvania Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, PennDOT, the Bucks County TMA, the Delaware Valley Regional Planning Commission, and Heritage Conservancy. So we have seven goals for the project, but overall, we just want to identify opportunities for making use of existing trails, which is to kind of help us minimize costs and expedite the development process. We also want to develop a trail concept plan, identifying proposed trail routes and improvements that take advantage of the natural and historic features of this area. I also want to just provide recommendations for trail safety, maintenance, operations, and accessibility as well. Then also just kind of find segments to prioritize these communities up. So this project is funded by through a grant from the Pennsylvania Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. The grant itself is $27,000, and we're also going to match that with $30,000 in Bucks County Planning Commission staff time. The grant kicked off January 1st, 2019, and is slated to end December 31st, 2021. And to help us with this process in developing this feasibility plan, we brought on consultant Gilmore and Associates to help us. Background, just going on, we know the Delaware Lehigh Trail has four, the September 11th trail aligned by 9/11, then also just from a county perspective developed, and the 2014 and 2019 Upper Neshaminy and Middle Neshaminy Creek feasibility studies were conducted. These really kind of identified the potential for trails in our county, and this area was included in that. So there is a precedent of, you know, trails being identified as a priority in this area. So then just some, but also from a municipal perspective, the municipalities involved in this study have prioritized trail and parks and rec development, or the development of park and recreational features as well. So we do know that there is an appetite for trails in this area. So from a broader regional context, here is the study area as a whole, and link the communities of Newtown, Washington's Crossing, and Yardley through some kind of trail connection. So to do this, we have identified maybe three prime corridors. We're going to go out and say that it could be a combination of all or some of these three corridors. This is kind of how we can see this unfolding. So the first one is going from northern Newtown Borough through to Washington's Crossing. This will go past the Washington's Crossing National Cemetery. And the next one is kind of heading due east from Newtown Borough and Goodnoe Elementary, and that's heading east towards the northern portion of Yardley Borough, and that'll actually hit the Delaware and Lehigh Canal towpath first and then drop into Yardley Borough. And then lastly, another corridor we have identified is starting in Cork Creek Park, going from St. Mary's Medical Center, and then heading east to the lower portion of Yardley Borough. So in the end, it could yet again be a combination of trail assets or trail facilities in all three of these corridors. This is kind of how we picture ourselves connecting these communities. So now there's a lot of potential destinations in this area. And I know you guys know them very well. So I'll just briefly touch on them. Obviously schools, we have Bucks County Community College, Council Rock North, George School, and New kind of Maple Point Middle Schools, a Parks Park, but also about half a dozen municipal villages at Newtown. From a historic perspective, obviously the historic borough of Newtown, the Garden of Reflection, Washington's Crossing Historic Park, and Washington's Crossing National Cemetery, and some other potential destinations, obviously St. Mary's Medical Center and the Lower Makefield Municipal Complex. So our estimated timeline for this project is we began receiving public input in October of 2020. We're going to conduct fieldwork, mapping, evaluation, and cost estimating. That began in May of 2020 and will go through to April of 2021. And we're going to reconvene the steering committee to discuss proposed trail alignments in May 2021, have a draft narrative of the plan and develop that through June and August of 2021, and solicit public input on that draft in September of 2021, and then have a final plan hopefully by December 2021. So, now we know we're living in a new time with COVID and everything like that. So to help us solicit public feedback for this feasibility study, we have developed a online tool to help get this feedback. And I'm going to quickly demonstrate that for you guys.
And while Chris is doing that, I'll just jump in here. And
you I'm not sure see many... that feature I have shared.
I can see it.
Okay. So you guys can see it?
Yes.
Yes?
Yep.
Okay, cool. Excellent. So we have developed an online feature to solicit public input. So we kick off with a nice landing page of the canal towpath itself, just letting people know that they can have a say in the planning process and it'll help us provide insight to this trail feasibility study. They click the side arrows to navigate through. So we do kick things off with a brief survey where we ask people to provide feedback on how they use trails and what they see developing in their area, and also potentially how they would use it. So does anyone in your household use trails for walking? We'll click yes. Just roughly say five times a week. Does anyone in your household use their bicycle to commute to work? We'll say yes. How many times a week? We'll say five. And what do they use it for? We'll say recreation. Then we go into some kind of more subjective questions. Would a bike trail near your home make you more or less likely to ride your bike to work or run errands or for recreation? Say more. How comfortable are you riding? How comfortable are you riding on the road with a speed limit of 25 miles per hour without a bike lane? Say comfortable. Then how comfortable are you riding on the road with a speed limit of 35 miles per hour without a bike lane? Say comfortable. And would expanding the trails network in your area make you more likely to use the trail? We'll say more. And these last two optional text questions are just kind of let us know how they'll use a trail. So we'll say for recreation. And then if they want to, this is completely optional, they can identify the neighborhood they reside in, so we'll just say Newtown. So then they would click submit to submit these answers to us. And we're happy to report that when we launched this on the 5th, we've gotten over 100 responses to the survey thus far. So we're really proud of what we've been able to do with this survey and the information we've been able to pull from it. So then navigating through. So then our last feature we have, it's just a map of trails and other amenities within this area where we ask people to provide comments on what they're seeing, if there's anything we missed, if there's a sidewalk we may have missed, or you know, some type of other, you know, park or shop or anything like that that we may have missed. So how people can do that is they can click this feature right here. And then they can click that right there and then zoom in. Let's say they live in Newtown, right down here, and let's just potentially say that there is a trail right here. We'll say shared use trail. and then press enter. And then that saves, and then that comment's there. And then if they want to delete it, they can simply press delete just like that. So that's how we've been able to solicit public feedback for this trail feasibility study we are kicking off. And then lastly, we just segue into a final thank you page. So on that end, that is the overview of the trail feasibility study we're launching for this area. Obviously, if you guys have any questions, please feel free to ask me or Paul.
This is Marvin. You mentioned two main potential corridors that would either head from Newtown toward Washington Crossing or from Newtown toward Yardley. So would those most likely somehow utilize the right-of-way of 532 and 332, or, and if so, on the road, or create new independent trail lanes, or is not that far yet?
Christian, do you want to address that, Christian, or do you want me to?
Paul, can you handle that one?
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you for asking that. Yeah, typically that's part of what we do with our field work is we try to look at potential corridors. So to your point, we oftentimes will look at the right-of-way width along roadways to see if, you know, they can accommodate trails. Typically what that requires is a basically, from the edge of the road to the adjacent property lines, it requires a minimum of about 15 feet. You need about a 5-foot buffer from the actual road, and then about 8 to 10 feet for the trail itself. And so what we do with our field work, and that is go out and assess these various road corridors to determine, like we say, if you have the right of way, or you may have it for, you know, 80% of it, but the trail, the study will also identify those properties where you might actually need to acquire an easement from them. Again, it is not our intention ever from the county perspective to, you know, utilize eminent domain or to ask municipalities to do that. That is never our intention. We are just trying to, like I say, identify opportunities for trails and identify those areas where we would need easements. We also, as some of you may be familiar, and it ties to this study as well, it's kind of why our interest in Newtown to Yardley and Washington Crossing is that I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with what's called the Circuit Trail Network. It is basically an 800-mile trail network that's envisioned for the greater Philadelphia region. To date, they've completed about 450 miles. And within Bucks County, the two primary, three primary trails that the county is working to build out. Obviously, the DNL towpath trail is already existing. The next one is the Newtown Rail Trail that I know some of you may have been following over the years. We were in front of the Borough Council back in 2016, and at that point had received a resolution of support for that, but was held up by a municipality to your south that we've since received support from them. And then lastly, the third one is the Neshaminy Greenway Trail. So basically by the Neshaminy Greenway Trail and the Newtown Rail Trail kind of coming together there in Newtown, it really presents a great opportunity to then go across county to connect to the DNL trail. So basically trail users will be able to access, you know, from Newtown all the way up to Easton or all the way down into Philadelphia and beyond, because part of what this trail connects to as well is the would be part of the DNL towpath trail is also part of what's called the East Coast Greenway Trail that then extends from Maine all the way to Florida. So if you are a bicyclist, that's part of what this trail network is designed to do. Did that answer your question?
Yes, I look forward to seeing the feasibility.
Thank you. Well, we appreciate your allowing us to come tonight and explain to you what we're doing and give you a feel for the tools.
In the list of people that you work with, is SEPTA included?
They were not for this particular project because they we've already like say we've already worked with SEPTA on, you know, for the portions of the Newtown Rail Trail that we're currently developing. They know that, you know, eventually our intent is to get it all the way into Newtown Borough, but right now we don't want to sign leases with SEPTA for segments that we don't have money in place to do the design, engineering, and construction for. So right now we, the Newtown Rail Trail currently within Upper Southampton Township is being funded both for design, and now if you've been down to that area, you know we've recently started construction on that. We are probably going to be submitting a grant through the next round of what's called the Regional Trails Program through Delaware Valley Regional Planning Commission for extending the trail into Northampton Township. We're trying to work with the township and the Aqua PA people who own the Churchville Reservoir to see about getting the trail extended initially to Churchville Nature Center. Again, all that is tentative at this point, but that's kind of our plan, is to pick it off piecemeal. So unfortunately, you guys being at the end of the line with the Newtown Rail Trail, you guys would probably be among the last segments to receive it. And that's also driven by when we go after, when we seek funding for trails, what pretty much every funding agency wants to see is connectivity to existing trails. So right now, like I say, we've got the, we started with Upper Southampton. They were on board because it's going to connect to the Pennypack Trail in Montgomery County. The Neshaminy Greenway Trail, we are, we have the potential to both build it south coming down from Doylestown as well as north, because we are currently in the process of the design stage, and we have construction funding in place to build a trail. If you're familiar with Core Creek Park and where the dog park is within Core Creek, and then it's going to extend basically along Tollgate Road over to Ellis Road, and we'll stop at the intersection of Ellis and Woodbourne. So that's kind of why our push to see about connecting from not only just Newtown itself, but also down around the Middletown area to get over to Yardley. So again, part of our plan, and again, if you're interested in more, we also, as part of our last segment of our Neshaminy Greenway feasibility study for that included the Newtown area, we did identify a way to kind of create what we call a loop trail through Newtown that would connect down to that Core Creek Park trail by basically putting, back to Marvin's earlier question about are we looking for trails or are we looking for bike lanes or whatever, that particular segment to get up into Newtown would involve using the existing sidewalks along Woodbourne Road, extending from Ellis Road up to Penn's Trail, and then establishing bike lanes along Woodbourne Road, because you've got a very, very wide pavement width there that would allow you to install bike lanes. If you've driven south on Second Street Pike within Upper Southampton Township recently, you'll see that they installed bike lanes there. That's what we envision for happening for Woodbourne Road. So again, the Newtown area is it has the potential for trails to just really explode over the next, you know, few years, provided we can get funding in place and continue to receive the support that we have to date.
I want to back you up because I served on the SEPTA Citizens Advisory Board, and we accomplished getting bicycles on the trains and the buses, and that increased ridership. So having SEPTA involved in this is important, because not only do they provide right-of-ways, but they're looking for ways to get people to their stations to increase their ridership, especially with the current problem. Also, looking at your maps, it looks like you bring all the trails to the borders of Newtown, but nothing within the borough itself.
Well, actually, that's, again, part of our field work. And I can tell you that we've been working with Julia and a gentleman, now again, his name's going blank on me, but for potentially making use of the former trolley right-of-way that connects Newtown Township and Newtown Borough across the creek basically from where the
the Penn National Bank is.
Yeah, the Penn National Bank over to Edgeboro, or not Edgeboro, but
Frost.
Frost. Thank you, Christian. I'm sorry, I deal with so many trails and so many segments that sometimes the names escape me. But that is part of what we are evaluating is ways to look at, you know, getting directly into the borough. And as part of that, again, we are working with New Downtownship because we know that at the end of Frost Lane there, as you get past Goodnow Elementary and the park there, they are actually in the design process for building a trail along Lower Dullington Road to connect out to Lindenhurst and Woodside Road. So again, we do look at trail connections both within the borough and outside as part of this study. And to your point, we will consider reaching out to SEPTA about adding them to the study in terms of the potential for connecting people to the stations. That's one of our primary goals, is to knowing that within the study area, that really the Woodbourne and Yardley stations are the two primary SEPTA stations. Again, that's part of what we would seek to connect to as well.
Just so you know, we've been in communications with SEPTA for the last month concerning gaining access to the, what we call the SEPTA lot, the former Newtown train station, which could provide a tremendous terminal for parking for cars with bicycles or bringing the bikes into Newtown. And that's a substantial area on Lincoln Avenue, right on a SEPTA bus route.
Yes, we're familiar with it.
Yeah, Paul was actually helping me when I was trying to deal with SEPTA years ago, so he's well aware of the lot.
Yeah, so we're back in communications with them, and we've already started cleaning up that lot with their help in our police department.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So again, that's part of what we try to do, is just connect all these different resources, whether they be transit, you know, schools, parks, whatever they are. That's really what we're trying to do here.
And listen, I don't want to take up too much of everyone's time, but one thing I, from the steering meeting that I learned during all this, is just because something's a bike trail doesn't mean that it actually has to be a physical trail. So it could actually be a portion of road that there's signage. Like there's different ways, because we're a small, the borough and our streets are tight. There's other ways to, maybe it wouldn't be the main tribute, like the main part of the trail, but then it, like you said, Bob, it could actually get through town too.
Yeah.
Lincoln is the tie-in to this.
Yes.
Because we already have parking lanes on those streets.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, Paul and Christian.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you again.
We appreciate your efforts, and we're looking forward to these trails.
And then my only other question, unless you have anything, anyone has anything else to say, is do you need anything from us at this point, like another resolution, or is this just we're going to be updating as things go along?
No, this, like I say, this is an entirely separate study from the Newtown Rail Trail. You know, if we hopefully, I shouldn't say when, but I shouldn't say if, but I should say when we get to doing the Newtown Rail Trail up in your neck of the woods, we would probably come to you and just ask you if you would want to, you know, have us present again the concept. But by that point, you know, we will have probably built it pretty much right up to your doorstep. I think what will happen is once we get to the bridge over the Neshaminy Creek, then the next phase would really be encompassing of the portion through both the George School and Middletown Township, the small portion of Newtown Township between the George School at South State Street, and then the portion within the borough. Because really, we've heard from the George School prior that, you know, while they're supportive of the trail, they really don't want the trail to ever stop at their property. So that's why I'm saying that at that point, we would really have one continuous segment, basically from the creek. That would kind of be our strategy right now. But again, as we get closer to, you know, like say, developing those segments, we'll revisit both with the George School and the municipalities to see if they're still on board. Because again, the George School may change their mind. Who knows? Times are different now, as we all are aware. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. And again, reach out to any of us at any time.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thanks for looking at this to continue the rail trail and the circuit trail on towards New Jersey. So it's terrific. And thank you so much, Nicole, for being the liaison and working with this project. This is great.
Yeah. And thank you, Tara. One other comment before is that, again, with the new bridge, there being the Scudder Falls Bridge, they've got the bike lane on that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, yep. By us getting into Lower Makefield Township, that's one of our primary connections, as well as try to get to the Scudder Falls Bridge bike path. So you'll be going
that.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah. So that's one of our primary objectives as well with this. All right.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Right. Have a good day, guys.
Bye-bye.
Right, bye-bye. All right. So on to our HARP COA, Sue.
It was a busy month. I'd like to make a motion to follow the recommendation of the Historic Architectural Review Board and direct the President of Council to sign the following certificates of appropriateness, thereby approving the historical appropriateness of the applications.
Sue, you're muted.
Has anybody else lost Sue?
Yeah, she's
muted.
I'm not muted. Can you hear me?
Now we can. You were off and on.
Yeah.
Okay, that was weird. Should I start over?
Yeah.
I'd like to make a motion to follow the recommendation of the Historic Architectural Review Board and direct the President of Council to sign the following certificates of appropriateness, thereby approving the historical appropriateness of the applications with final approval by the code enforcement officer. COA 2020-33, 28 South State Street. The applicant is seeking a certificate of appropriateness for the installation of a hanging sign and a wall sign for New Age astrology readings and crystals. HARP recommended approval of the application as presented. COA 2020-034, 119 Liberty Street. The applicant is seeking a certificate of appropriateness for the replacement of a section of old 3-foot fence with new 4-foot aluminum fence. HARP recommended approval of the application as presented. COA 2020-35, 35 North Lincoln Avenue. The applicant is seeking a certificate of appropriateness for extending a small rear addition, which includes the original porch, now part of the existing deck, not desk. It will be enclosed to run the length of the original porch. HARP recommended approval of the application as presented and allowing the submission of revised drawings with more detailed notations prior to the council meeting, noting that the roofing material will match the existing on the adjacent structure. The size of the cornice and roof and overhang will match the existing structure. Gutters will be half round to match the existing structure. Siding will match the siding on the house, including exposure. The cornice and trim will match the existing house. The windows will be aluminum clad or wood. The roof of the box bay will match the existing bay on the side of the house, and the balustrades will be rebuilt to match the existing. COA 2020-036, 131 Liberty Street. The applicant is seeking a certificate of appropriateness for the replacement of an existing 6-foot chain link fence with a 6-foot red cedar solid board fence. HARP recommended approval of the application as presented.
I'm so sorry, this next one is mine. Can we just pull it out and do it separate?
Sure, because you can't vote on it.
I just recuse myself for that one? How should I do that? Sorry.
Okay. That makes sense, actually.
You should probably vote on that one separately. It just makes it easier to do it that way.
Sorry about that.
Sorry, I didn't think of it either. Thank you. COA 2020-38, 415 East Washington Avenue. The applicant is seeking a certificate of appropriateness for the replacement of the barn roof. Homeowner Sue Fisher was present for the application. She noted that the roof was deteriorating and said the roofing would match the house. I recommended approval if the application is presented. COA 2020-40, 201 North State Street. The applicant is seeking a certificate of appropriateness for the replacement of the front door and side lights. Our recommended approval of the application is presented. COA 2020-41, 35 North Chancellor Street. The applicant is seeking a certificate of appropriateness for the replacement of windows. Our recommended approval of the application as presented, noting that the 9/9 windows had been replaced in the 1940s or 1950s and failed and will be replaced with 2/2 wood windows, including screens. And I know that once we get a second, a lot of these folks are present if they'd like to comment on their applications.
I'll second. All right, we've had a motion, we've had a second. Are there any specific questions from council?
Isn't there one more reading for 42?
That was the amendment to the agenda. That we did.
Cross it off. Thank you.
Okay. And so as Sue, you pointed out, some of the applicants are here. So do you want to check with them now and see?
Sure. I think the applications are pretty straightforward. So I'm not sure if anyone has any questions, but I think I saw that Michael Stevenson is on the call. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct. He's here.
Is there anything you'd like to say?
Mike Stevenson?
You're muted.
There he is.
Okay.
He unmuted.
Is there anything you'd like to say about the application?
He unmuted and then remuted, so I'm not sure.
Okay. All right. And I saw that that I'm not sure if it's Dennis who's on or Linda. Laylock, anything you'd like to mention about your application? I guess not.
Okay.
Right.
Came on, the Laylocks are here.
Okay.
We're here, we're just having computer issues.
Understood. Just curious if there was anything in particular you'd like to mention.
I don't have anything to say about the application unless you have any questions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And Paula Raimondo, any comments on yours?
No, I don't have anything really to add unless you had any questions. And I had submitted through Matt all of the annotations to the original drawings. So
yeah, we got the updated version with
yes
asked for.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't think that anyone's on. I don't think are Lisa Bill. Miles on?
No, Lisa's not on.
Okay. We're skipping the
Bill Heineman's on.
Yeah, Bill's here for the windows.
I was trying to go in order. I don't see David Herbert on. So, Bill, any comments you'd like to make?
Just a request to please do the right thing.
Okay. Does anyone have any specific questions for anyone?
No. All right, we had a motion, question, discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Nays? The motion passes.
Okay, so I would like to make a motion to follow the recommendation of the Historic Architectural Review Board and direct the President of Council to sign the following certificate of appropriateness, thereby approving the historical appropriateness of the application with final approval by the Code Enforcement Officer. 2020-37, 135 Liberty Street. The applicant is seeking a certificate of appropriateness for the replacement of an existing 6-foot chain link fence with a 6-foot cedar solid tongue and groove fence. HARB recommended approval of the application as presented. Nicole, any comments? Oh, I guess we need a second first.
Second.
Got a second. All right, so Nicole, you're muted. Any comments on your new fence?
Nope, and I will recuse myself from the vote.
So I have a question, actually. Are you, so because Elisa's putting up, taking down her chain link and putting up a fence, and then you're putting up fence. So are your fences coordinated in some way? You have two different styles, or how are you doing that?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to share the center post.
Mm-hmm.
So the post that's on the property line will be the same.
Right, I see.
I mean, they're both wood.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're the same height. They're just different styles.
Yeah. So very good. Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
He's drinking again.
Any nays? Motion passes. All right. Thank you, Sue. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Okay. For the president's report, this is rather a sharing of just general ideas and information that I have regarding Halloween and from the community. I've gotten some feedback from Goodnow Elementary, which provides a lot of our Halloween trick-or-treaters, and I've spoken to some residents on Liberty Street, which is the epicenter of Halloweenness, as has Nicole. And there's a few things we just wanted to share with you. So Halloween exists, Halloween continues, but we want everyone to be safe. We want you to be safe and have fun. And there are some resources out there. For example, on the CDC website actually has trick-or-treating and Halloween party and festivity ideas, and you can link it to risk levels, and then it can describe different things, such as taking individually wrapped treats or treats in bags or baggies and putting them, for people to pick up individually on a table or in your yard or at the end of your driveway. There's the a site called Halloween2020.org, and they actually have a chart from the Harvard Global Health Institute can go to your county and see your county risk level. And then they have a lot of really fun ideas on there too. So there's plenty of things that we can do. And some people in the area are having ideas like using grabbers or taking wrapping paper tube or another type of chute to send candy down. Because we have two issues. Is the children and touching things. And then the other issue really is the clustering. And we have a lot of trick-or-treaters who come to some parts of Newtown. And I've had 300 to 400 trick-or-treaters a night. And Liberty Street is so much fun, and kids come from far away to go there. So we're going to say this year, those who feel comfortable will put out candy and do it in a way that they are mindful of safe distancing. And we ask the trick-or-treaters to wear masks, which when they're around others, and they can be Halloween themed as part of your costume. But to be aware for residents as you hand out candy to try to minimize people gathering out front. And if you're out trick-or-treating and taking your children out trick-or-treating, please try to avoid gathering in groups and clusters in fronts of houses. So have a safe and happy Halloween. And that's all for the president's report. So on to the engineer. Michelle?
Thank you. The only item on the agenda for me tonight is an update on this year's road program. As you all may have noticed, the road program is almost done. All the work on North Chancellor and Mercer Street, most of the work I'll say on North Chancellor and Mercer Street is done. The base repairs were started on Congress and Green Street today. Center Street will be started tomorrow. And their schedule is to start on Jefferson Court at the end of the week. So besides those small amounts of base repair and some sealing that has to be done, I'm sure you all will agree this is a very different road program than last year's road program. So hopefully within the next 2 weeks, everything will be done. And as I told the president today, the contractor has decided to submit only one invoice for the work, and that will be submitted when all the work is done. Does anybody have any questions for me?
Michelle, I have received several contacts from the residents who have spoken highly of the quality of the work.
Great.
Which I think we did a good selection of the contractor. So I just wanted to share that with you. Multiple people have contacted me.
Yeah, I wish sometimes we didn't have to use the low bidder, right? Because last year compared to this year, that's some of the differences you see.
The guys were very professional and very friendly and also very accommodating. I know a couple of times I pulled my car out of the garage and not to go anywhere. I just had stuff to do, and they kept asking if I needed to get out, and they were willing to move their equipment and let me drive out. So very nice.
And sometimes you found some people parked in your driveway that shouldn't be in there.
Only once.
That's Michelle. Great to hear. So thank you for sharing that. It's nice to get actual positive feedback from residents when the work is being done, because usually it's very stressful. So
you are right. And I will pass that along to our contractor.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, I've got a couple questions quick from your report. For the Jewish Center building that's going up on State Street, have we addressed the neighbor's water accumulation problem?
That is going to be addressed when they do the paving work along the road.
Do we have an estimated time for that?
We do not. They, as you may be aware, they were not at the site doing any work for several months. They just recently came back and started to install the stormwater management system. We're starting to get into the winter months, so usually you try to get a building up and under roof before winter hits, and I don't know if they're going to be able to do that. So probably not to sometime next late spring, summer.
I saw the water retention area in front of the building. How does that empty out?
I know it is an infiltration seepage bed. I would have to check for sure what manner they are using, but usually they are designed to infiltrate into the ground, and they have an overflow system, a clean out or a yard inlet, that if they don't infiltrate, it rises up and then overflows across the ground.
But not...
I could check. I'm sorry. I was going to say I could check on that and let you know tomorrow.
Just so it doesn't go to that neighbor's property.
No, he's upstream, so I would hope it wouldn't get up that far, but understood. Okay.
The next item, in your report on Estate and Court Street,
yes.
How was the encroachment issue with the neighbors resolved?
That is one of the outstanding items. There are, I believe, four encroachments that they show easements. Where they're going to have to give the neighboring properties easements, and we told them that they're going to need to get agreements signed by the property owners and then recorded. And there's a couple of encroachments that they're just going to remove. And we stated at the Planning Commission meeting that they're going to have to give the borough written confirmation that those property owners are aware that those encroachments are going to be removed.
I sent the zoning, or was it the zoning or planning people report onto the neighbors across the street this morning.
Great.
So they're aware of that information.
Great.
Next item, we had a contractor affect the integrity of the street at Congress and Mercer when they were doing construction. Did we issue a claim against the contractor there? Do you know?
I forgot where we left that. I think we were going to have the chief, one of the chief's guys make a report, and then the borough was going to submit it to your insurance carrier, I believe.
Chief, any answer?
We did document the damage.
Let's follow up on that, Michelle, you and myself.
Okay.
Okay. I'm done. Thank you, Michelle.
Thanks. Does anybody else have any questions for Michelle? All right. Thanks very much, Michelle.
Thank you.
All right, on to our solicitor's report, please.
Thank you. We have three items for you this evening, and I'll address the first two, and Valentina will address the third one. The first is we have a motion to adopt resolution 10-13-2020, approving the application for a Green Regions grant at 112 Court Street, also known as Bird in Hand, Lot 2. And this is, as I said, a resolution allowing us to apply for the PICO Green Region Open Space Grant.
Do we need a motion?
Yes, we do, to adopt a resolution, yes.
I so move.
Second.
All right, we've had a motion, we've had a second. Julia, would you care to just give a brief summary for the public?
Sure, and actually, let me share my screen here for just a sec. Okay, so here we have a rendering by our landscape architect of the park. And so the plan for the park, as you saw when we applied for the DCNR grant, is to do plantings around the outside to have an open grass area in the middle, benches within the park. The plantings are going to be those are to emphasize the species of plants that were used historically in medicine, cooking, and in the textile industry. And that's to reflect the history of the site being where the woolen uniform cloth for uniforms was being stored during the Revolutionary War, which of course resulted in the skirmish with the British troops when they stole the fabric. So here's the plan. And as you know, we got a DCNR grant for $70,000. And now I'm looking for money to meet our match. And so I'm applying for $10,000 from Green Regions. And I put a draft of the narrative up for you to see. It's not the full application yet, but it just gives you a description of the grant and why we're asking for money.
Good. Any questions?
Julie, why are we putting so much tall stuff to hide the house? The two trees in the arbor, I'm assuming, from that standpoint, to block a view of the Bird in Hand property.
No, that's Court Street. That's Court Street. It's just a view. You're sitting under the of the big oak, and you're looking towards Court.
Okay.
So if you see the arbor on the left, what's behind you is the Court Inn. Yeah.
Correct. Okay, I got it. I was
okay.
The other side. Thank you.
Yeah.
And
I think the details. Sorry, Julia, go on.
Oh, I'm saying that the application is emphasizing that this is a park where people can walk and go and sit, and I'm emphasizing that, and as we talk about the comprehensive plan, that we don't provide enough for the older population in the borough, and the borough is getting older. And so the slant of the application is, you know, we have playgrounds for other people, for the young kids, but we really have no really good places for people who are more sedentary and would like to walk somewhere and sit and enjoy the greenery.
So that actually should have been like grandma or grandpa there sitting with the kids playing.
Yeah,
kind of
looks like
Ted. and to the point about the tree,
we got the initial, top-down drawing that Nancy Minnick gave, but that process, yeah. We can say as we go through it, hey, we would like to have a view of this because that building is interesting, or move the tree over here, or whatever it is, and council can certainly, be sort of involved in that process.
Right.
I have a question for Marv and Nicole. Did we put in the budget that we were going to paint the fence?
So we could probably do that sooner than later. I actually sent Julia that email. It shouldn't be too expensive. We were trying to reach out for volunteers to do it just to save some money. I haven't gotten very far on it, but we had a group that had sanded and painted the metal fence, I guess, is at the other park. And I reached out to that contact to see if there was any more work available for that group. But as of right now, I would say, yes, we should get it painted. And if we can get it done sooner than later, Julia agreed that that doesn't, affect everything that all the work she's been doing.
But if we use
to clarify, the money is there. The main thought was whether to have it be standalone paint jobs or a consolidated paint job, but there's flexibility to go either way.
Yeah. The fence, painting the fence and actually installing water service for the park are actually in this year's budget. The water service is not in the scope of the grant. And so I actually had said to Nicole that we really should address both of those items in this year's budget since the money was already allocated. But anything that's under the scope of grant of the DCNR grant shouldn't start until we have the actual grant agreement, which I believe will probably begin January 1st, and that way we can get credit for whatever monies we put and get reimbursed for it.
Julia, does...
But not what we do this year.
Julia, would our budget items be considered part of the match?
No. Not for the DCNR grant. I don't know about for the Green Regions, but for DCNR, nothing that we do before we actually... before the grant starts can go into the grant.
Well, should we wait?
So that's why I say the water service was not considered part of it. No, we don't have to, because those two items, the water service and the repair of the fence, they were not in the scope of the grant.
From the standpoint of finding out about who these players are and what they did and how they influenced generations of guitar players after.
Can we mute somebody? Somebody's not muted. There we go.
I was just gonna, I don't think that was me. I was just gonna say, the hard part is gonna be to get someone to paint it, while the weather's nice in this next month or whatever, but I do think with the holidays coming up and maybe people taking more walks, it would be nice if we could make it look a little nicer. So, mm-hmm.
Nicole, I agree. Yeah.
Nicole, yeah. We're looking at also painters for the Borough Hall.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if we can marry those two things together or not.
Yeah.
If we could go.
Well, and certainly if I can't get the
talk about that next. We'll talk about that next week.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right.
All right, thanks. So we've had plenty of discussion. So are we ready for our vote? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any nays? Motion passes. Thank you. Thanks, Julia. Right, back to you, Mike.
Our second item is a policy review for a business integrity policy. Give me 1 second if I pull it up. At our last meeting, we entered into a 5-year winter services agreement with PennDOT. And as part of entering into these agreements with PennDOT, they ask all of the municipalities to adopt a business integrity policy. And the policy that you have for your consideration this evening, the purpose is to ensure that all business conducted by Newtown Borough observes high standards of honesty and integrity. There is a definition section of the policy, which defines who the borough is, who the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is, the confidential information, what consent for entering into certain contracts, financial interests. It has a definition of gratuity that is consistent with the governor's executive order. And then it has a definition of immediate family. The policy is that all borough parties, including elected officials, employees, consultants, and contractors, shall conduct themselves in a manner that fosters public confidence in the integrity of the borough procurement process. And then it lays out the procedures for every time we are engaging in contracting or in any way or in any business, any procurement, the policies that we must follow. Again, this is a standard policy that PennDOT wants entities to pass. This is not in any way, the fact that we haven't had one doesn't mean that we were doing something wrong in the past or that something was done improperly. It just means that we didn't adopt one of these before. And if you're going to deal with PennDOT, they want you to have one of these on your books. And Sue was the one who, we had gotten her a draft of this, and she put this together for the borough.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Sue. I know you were.
Thanks to Mike and company. It made it way easier to take it from there and put it into our format than to come up with one. So that was great.
Oh gosh, yeah. I have one question for that. Well, do we need a motion on this, Mike, or is this because the motion is not written under you? It's just policy review. So
yeah. If you want to adopt the policy tonight, a motion to adopt the policy would be in order.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if we're thinking of actually making a motion, then I guess we're not sending comments later. I guess the first, so was this something from PennDOT, or it was based mm-hmm. on that township policy, or that also got included on share file?
It was based on the Abington one. Michael's company had worked on that. He gave us that as a draft to work from.
Mm-hmm. In terms of definitions, financial interest and immediate family don't show up in the document at all. Usually don't have definitions when it's not in the right. document at all. And the other thought I had is that this is a policy, it's not an ordinance. Is there actually any rule of enforcement? Because when you're using the word shall, it seems like a very enforceable sort of thing. And especially in the last one where it says that any contractor that sees one shall immediately notify the borough. Can you really say that can you force somebody else to do something with a small word like shall when there's no enforcement aspect?
So Marv, the first issue is that you are correct that we do the definition of financial interest and immediate family, and it does not specifically show up in the policy. But both of those phrases and both of those definitions are contained in the Public Official and Employees Ethics Act and the State Adverse Interest Act, which are referenced in the policy at paragraph 2. And they are consistent with what is contained in that act. This is, again, I would say that it is, to your second question about enforcement, the enforcement actually comes from either the State Ethics Commission or from the state, if a public official is found to have violated this. And if it goes so far as a public official is engaging in self-dealing or is funneling business to a relative, there also can be criminal prosecution for this. Again, what I find interesting about this policy and that PennDOT wants you to have this policy is you're governed by everything in this anyway, because it's contained in the Public Official and Employees Ethics Act. So this is the old expression, this is kind of belt and suspenders. PennDOT wants to make sure you have this policy on your books so that anyone doing business with Newtown Borough doesn't have to look at state acts. They can just look at your policy. So it's a little bit, I don't want to say overkill, but.
Yeah, I definitely hear what you're saying in terms of, you know, borough employees or council people, but so that's why I emphasize number seven. Can you really say that a contractor, you know, an outside person has to do something when it's just a policy?
Well, once they're conducting business with the borough, they're expected to adhere to the provisions of the Ethics Act and any criminal statutes that would govern this. They can't be attempting to exert undue influence on anyone who's going to vote on a contract. So, again, we drafted this for Abington a few years ago when we were doing a very large road project with PennDOT, and a lot of this language is what we had gleaned from other of these policies that PennDOT had approved. So I understand your point, but PennDOT wants it, so.
Tradition.
That's right.
It's a condition of receiving the money, Marv.
So when we've adopted other policies, we've actually had a resolution. Do we need to do that, or can we just do a motion?
I think you can do it as a motion to adopt the resolution. We can put the resolution ahead of time, or you can just do it as a motion to adopt this policy, whatever you'd like.
For consistency's sake, I'm thinking in our policy file, it makes sense to, rather than having a policy that didn't have a resolution, to vote for the resolution. What do you think, Sue?
For consistency's sake, that makes sense, sure. So do we want to put this off to our next meeting and prepare a resolution?
I don't think you have to worry about, let's hope you don't have to worry about plowing any roads for PennDOT between now and November. So there wouldn't be an issue of receiving the money. So if you want to put it off to November, I don't think.
Yeah, we're fine with that. That's for 2021. So we're good. Yep. Yeah.
But when do we have to approve the PennDOT agreement?
You did it last week.
We did it last week. So, okay. Sure. I have no problem cleaning this up and getting it done next meeting.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So we'll put this on the November work session agenda. So
I think that's a good idea.
Okay. Perfect.
Thank you.
Okay. And for my section, the Planning Commission, the Newtown Borough Planning Commission, sent us some comments about the two large zoning ordinances, Ordinance 773 and Ordinance 774, that are going to be considered by council at the next meeting in November. The comments to Ordinance 773 were simply a suggestion for an addition of a word. Our office doesn't have any opposition to that. If council would like to add that, that can definitely be added. Regarding Ordinance 774, the Planning Commission wanted to remove the word visual from a few sections of the ordinance that would that gave the borough authority to regulate the visual aspects of these telecommunication devices. Our office does have an issue with the removal of that. While the borough is not able to prohibit the placement of these telecommunication devices, the borough is still empowered to pass zoning regulations and require that these facilities use visual things such as stealth technology, screening, color, material. To take this out of the ordinance would be basically giving away part of the borough's innate zoning authority. So we would suggest and strongly suggest that this word visual at these three sections, which the borough planning commission states, be kept in there.
Okay. Is there any recommendation to perhaps clarify the word visual, or if not an alternate word? The thought from the planning commission was that it was so very vague, and how could you actually, you know, it didn't give much direction to anybody who was applying to put one in. And while we can't get into exact specifics in the ordinance, we wouldn't want to do that. Is there a way to clarify the word visual, or is it legally recommended that is the best word?
We would suggest that it stay visual. There's case law that supports that this, I'll just say section 41, number 11 is talking about zoning authority. So that's what it's related to. And it's also supported by the different sections throughout the ordinance that talk about screening requirements and stealth technology requirements. Mm-hmm.
And I also think it's consistent with HARB, right? Because a lot of what they rule on is the visual aspect of it. So I agree, I think we should leave it in.
Yeah, I think HARB, I mean, I don't disagree in leaving it in, but I think that a HARB ordinance would still cover it. If the word visual is not in there, they would still have to. But there is no real hard way to put in like a cellular device.
And I also agree with keeping visual. And I also just want to make one, you know, clarification on the previous ordinance in terms of how we actually want to put the additional word in. What the Planning Commission was trying to differentiate with was the any entry that a vehicle would be accessing the carport as opposed to a door. In other words, you know, even if you're not supposed to have an access for the vehicle, in theory, you could still be allowed to have some sort of person door. So now whether that's actually the best, you know, word, you know, additional word to do that, you know, remains, but I just wanted to clarify that that's the direction the Planning Commission was trying to go. And it does seem that distinguishing between, you know, vehicle versus person access is a reasonable thing to do.
I'm sorry, Marv, can you explain again what the changes? I didn't understand it and I still don't. I'm sorry.
Well, can I explain that one since I wrote the definition that they're arguing about? Okay. So this is a definition for the term carport. And I was trying to define the carport in such a way that the important feature of it is that it doesn't have a garage door. Okay, well, you can't use the term garage door because that's for a garage, not a carport. Because if it's open, we allow you to count that space as a parking space. If you have a door to close and it makes it a garage with a garage door that closes, then our ordinance does not allow you to count that space as a parking space, because as we all know, people don't park in their garages, they fill their garages up with stuff. So when I was writing this, I was trying to figure out how do I write this to say, you know, your carport can be enclosed on three sides, but not the fourth. And you wanted to make sure that the fourth side that you couldn't close is where your car goes in and out, as opposed to a side door, a man door is what they're called, where a person goes in and out. So that's why I use the term vehicle door. And that seemed to be confusing to at least one person on the Planning Commission. I'm not sure that putting the word access between vehicle and door and saying, well, you can't have a vehicle access door makes any more sense, but if that clarifies it, then I guess I understand it. If anybody else has a better term, then I'm happy to entertain it.
And we can't call it a garage door?
I think if you call it a garage door, then you're talking about a garage.
Right.
Okay. And we're not talking about a garage, we're talking about a carport, and we wanted to make sure that there was definitely a difference between one and the other. Carport's just basically an open structure that you could put your car in.
So I'd have to look back to the actual wording of the ordinance, which I don't have up, but I don't know, vehicle door, is that applying to the entry? Because there is, again, there is no door.
Well, it's saying you can't have a vehicle door, right? Yeah. So the ordinance, I'm trying to find if I have my ordinance in front of me here. Just say how we actually wrote it. Let me go, it's across the room.
But I mean, so getting to the other side, clearly if somebody wanted to have a door going from their house out to this area, you know, they should be allowed to have it, you know, for people. So they were just trying, I think, to clarify that this wasn't.
Okay, here we go. This is the definition we put in the ordinance. And we don't currently have a definition for carport in our current ordinance. We were adding the definition: a covered structure attached to or underneath the building for the storage of one or two automobiles with at least one fully open side and no closable vehicle door.
That seems clear. No.
And now if you built something that wasn't attached to your house, that's an accessory structure. And that would have other rules that would control it. So this is attached to or underneath the building. So that's an important feature of this.
So do we actually have to decide on wording now to be able to vote on something, or?
Well, we have to advertise this, so I think we have to decide tonight.
How about no closable door for vehicle access?
Well, but that means getting into the
vehicle access.
What?
At the vehicle access point.
I think no vehicle door makes perfect sense, but if we want to add access, I'm fine with that too. I don't think we need to search for other words. Seemed pretty clear.
So no,
I don't have an opinion. I apologize.
So no, you were saying no, just leaving it the way it is, or putting access before the word door?
I would leave it the way it is, but if we want to add access, I don't think that hurts anything. It seemed pretty clear to me when you read it. Mm-hmm.
You know, I was getting their point across, but you know, personally, I'm fine with the way it reads.
Okay, let's leave it the way it is then. And then, Valentina, you saw their third comment was a typo.
Yeah.
Do the word all to Anne. Yeah. There were also comments from the Bucks County Planning Commission regarding the ordinance also. Did you see them?
Just give me one second, I have to pull them out.
And I actually had uploaded a change in wording to address one of their concerns.
Oh, I saw that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
The change in wording was fine.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So the Bucks County Planning Commission had made a recommendation regarding one of the sections that we changed, talking about the engineering scale for the drawings that were being submitted under SALDO. And I actually talked with Michelle also. And so I put some wording up on the share file earlier to slightly change that wording just to list the scales that we would accept. Originally, it just said, you know, any commonly used engineering scale, and they thought that that was too vague. So is everybody okay with that? The other two comments they had, I actually didn't agree with either. One of them was okay with me. That was under the Versaldo also. There was one where they had suggested, it was referring to talking about tree protection, and they had recommended changing the wording of in that section to start, was talking about putting trenches underneath trees, and had suggested changing our first sentence to read, trenches shall be rooted around the tree protection area. I'm fine with that. I was not fine with their second one, where they were talking about when something goes to harb, because they missed the whole concept of it needing to be visible from the street. So I don't agree with their recommendation for their sentence to say, retaining walls constructed in the Newtown Borough Historic District shall require review by the harb and approval by Borough Council. That's not necessarily so, if no one can see it.
True.
So,
can you let Tara back in? Sure, why not?
Well, is that something they wanted to totally add that wasn't there
that's
at all?
That's what I was gonna ask.
They were changing the wording. Right now it does say harb. I just had that in front of me. Let's see.
Because if it wasn't there at all, we'd always say retaining walls visible from the street.
Well, what we wrote was, for properties within the historic district, any retaining wall visible from the street shall be reviewed and approved by the Newtown Borough Joint or Historic Architectural Review Board. Why they changed the word, I don't know. They were saying that all retaining walls, that's not true.
So they got rid of viewable from the street, which was there originally?
Right, they took that out. They just said all retaining walls.
No, I agree with you. It could be
Really
low. I do
too. Okay. So we want to accept the first one, but not the second. The one about the trenches. Let's see, what did they do with trenches? Yeah, they had changed the wording of our section on trenches that made it a little bit clearer that our first requirement is that trenches shall be rooted around trees, around the tree protection area. Oh, wait a minute. You know what? They changed that. I'm not sure I agree with this. So we had the following. In the case of running utility lines, root trenches around trees. And then they talk about other things to do if you can't do that. They changed that to say, trenches shall be rooted around the tree protection area. Now, which do we prefer?
If it's rooting around the tree, if it's going right around the tree, if it's going around the tree protection area, then it's protecting that loop and drip line, right?
Right, it's further away. Mm-hmm. So you prefer that one?
I think that change makes sense.
Okay.
And Marv was saying something, Marv?
Yeah, I think I was saying exactly what we've come to now, that it looked like what they were changing it to was a bigger area, you know, right, further away from the tree.
Right, so we like that.
Is it too much? I mean, so previously it had been...
Well, the point is it's in the SALDO. So if somebody says, you know, I'd like to be able to go around, you know, around the tree protection area, but I just can't do it, give me a waiver, and then council would have to decide if that was okay.
It seems like it's good to err on the side of protecting the tree as much as possible.
Yeah.
Because I guess the whole idea is it wouldn't get less chance of it getting intertwined with the roots eventually.
Right. Okay.
I'm sorry. Thank you for taking over. Technical difficulties. So I'm back. Thank you. So I missed the first part. You talked about the other planning commission input when the word was changed for the amount and all.
What?
The other language that the planning commission.
Okay, which one are you talking about?
First it was Newtown Planning Commission, now it's Bucks County Planning Commission.
Oh, okay, all right, thank you. Thanks, Mark.
Okay, I didn't know when you disappeared, Tara, I just saw that.
It was probably about 90 seconds ago, or yeah, okay. 2 minutes.
This is the Bucks County Planning Commission. Okay.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, all right, so we're going to accept the trench language around the trees. We're not going to accept the retaining wall comment about HARB. And we are going to change the language about the scales to be used for the plan submission. So those were the three things for the Bucks County Planning Commission.
So do we have to get back to them about it, or that's just advisory and we do what we want?
I think we do what we want. They just want to see what we finally pass, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So do we need a motion so that you can advertise with the change in language?
Just to advertise in general. They're minor changes, so we can make them without altering everything.
Okay. So we had already authorized advertisement before. Do we need to authorize advertisement with the change in wording?
No, you're fine then.
Okay. So do you understand? We're okay back and
forth. I understand.
Okay.
Yes. So I was just confused because I thought the prior authorization was to send it to the Planning Commission, whereas this would be an advertisement for the public meeting. So.
Yeah, I think we did everything at once.
Okay.
I think. Yeah. Judy, is that right? Isn't that what we did?
Oh, we better double check it. We better double check that.
I think we did, because usually we don't do that, and I agree we should double check, but in this case, because the changes were so were sort of necessary and fairly small.
I don't know that this has been advertised, that these two ordinances have been advertised yet. There was a long discussion about whether we send it to the Newtown Planning Commission and the Bucks County Planning Commission together simultaneously, one before the other. I'm not 100% sure that this was advertised, and I this listener would be the ones to advertise it. So yeah, we should just double check that.
Well, I think actually what we did is we voted to advertise, but we knew that we had enough time.
Possibly.
That if there was a problem, we could come, we would be able to make before it actually got advertised. So Valentina, it actually hasn't been advertised yet.
No, it hasn't.
Authorized you to do it. And that was in August, right?
Yeah. Okay, then we're fine.
Okay.
If it's already been authorized to be advertised, we don't need to have another motion.
I can look in the August.
Judy, look back in the, I thought it was August that we did it.
All right, I'm gonna look. Thank you. Okay, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes, at the August 11th council meeting, motion was made by Councilor Turner, seconded by Councilor Suecos, passed unanimously to advertise a public hearing on November 10th to adopt the ordinance amending the saldo and zoning ordinances.
And then there should have been
That was to advertise the public hearing.
Right, right. And then there should be another one where we advertise for this, for the second one.
To adopt the ordinance amending the saldo and zoning.
Right. Then there was another one.
Yeah, there.
Well, I found it was September 2nd.
Okay.
September 2nd, motion was duly made and amended by Councillor Cohen, seconded by Councillor Radowitz, and passed unanimously to advertise the ordinance amendment regulating telecommunications facilities and mobile parks, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, with adoption on November 10th. So we're good.
Right. That's what you're actually approving those minutes tonight.
Right. So we did it. Yeah.
We ready to move on? Tara, do you want to move forward with approval of minutes? Tara, I think Tara's having issues. Hey, Tara, can you hear me? No.
Okay, shall I take over?
Yes.
Okay. Can I have a motion to approve the September 2nd, 2020 online work session minutes?
I move to approve December 2nd, 2020 online work session minutes.
We have a second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. May I have a motion to approve the September 8th, 2020 online council meeting minutes?
I make a motion to approve the September 8, 2020 online council meeting minutes.
Second.
And there's been a motion and a second. Any comment? If not, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. May I have a motion to approve the September 24th, 2020 online special council meeting minutes?
I'll make a motion to approve the September 24th, 2020 online special council meeting minutes.
A second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any comment? If not, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Committee reports, budget and finance.
Okay. Tara's coming back in via phone.
Okay, are you letting her in?
Yeah, Tara, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. We just made it through the minute, so now we're at the committee reports, budget and finance.
Oh, okay. Thanks. So you can, I'm getting my voice back here. So you can just have me recused off of the approval of minutes.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so budget and finance.
Okay. I'd like to present our preliminary draft budget. You've all received the interoffice memo. This notes that we have our special work session at 7 p.m. Thursday, October 2020. This will be held at the Newtown Borough Theater. So that we can accommodate for social distancing, the public to view, and also for Pat to be able to hand out papers and make sure we see what we need to see. It'll work much better for her if she can do that. So we have obtained permission from Andy Smith to use the Newtown Theater. So Pat is working on tidying up the last bits of the budget, and she will have it available for all of you by the end of this week. So when you get it, take some time to review it. Any questions you might have in advance, please ask Pat and or the liaison to the committee or board to which your question relates. That way, well, a lot of our routine questions can be answered before we go into the meeting. And then we will have an agenda of discussion items for the meeting. Anything that you would like to add to that discussion list, please tell Pat in advance and she can have it ready for us.
Can I ask a question, Tara?
Yes.
I'm confused about the time. In January, when we set times for meetings, we said that all the meetings were at 7 o'clock, except the budget meeting, which was at 5:30, and that's what we agreed.
Yes, we did. And then when it got advertised at 7.
Oh, okay.
Yep, so we have to do it at 7.
Okay.
I had the same question.
Thanks.
All right, thanks. Does anybody have any questions? No? Okay. All right, well, get your pencils and rulers out at home.
Oh, Tara, is this budget going to be submitted to us electronically, or are we getting paper copies?
It will be submitted to you electronically, but then paper copies will be made available.
Okay.
So I do have one other question. Maybe I'm the only one who has trouble seeing in Newtown Theater, but it's dark in there. And are we going to have tables so we can like lay these papers out and follow them, or how's it going to work?
Yes, so I'm going to work with Andy. I have folding tables at home. I may need to recruit some from some of you. They have tables there. We will make it work.
Bring your own table.
Bring your own light.
Bring your own dragon flashlight chair.
Is there popcorn?
Oh, I don't think that's a free usage fee.
Wine.
There you go.
Good idea.
They have a liquor license. And if we all walk home, the chief can, you know, accompany us.
There we go. So, okay, so we'll be on the lookout for it. She's doing the last bits, and she'll let you know when it's ready. All right,
are there
next,
microphones?
I'd like to entertain a motion to accept the consolidated expenditure report.
I will do that, but Bob, did you have a question?
Do we have microphones or a sound system?
No, this is old school. You have to project.
Okay.
Okay, so I'll make a motion to accept, subject to audit, the consolidated expenditure report for the month of September, totaling $120,346.92.
A second.
All right, we have a motion of a second. Any questions? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Nays? Motion passes. Right, we've already had Nicole and the trails. So let's move on to streets, lights, and properties.
Okay. Michelle gave a report of the 2020 road project. Other things that are happening, we've been working with SEPTA and the chief to remove the old vehicles and boats out of the SEPTA lot. That should be completed by the end of the week. If not, SEPTA is informed that they will clear out the lot to remove those attractive nuisances and make the area safe. I'm also identifying contractors for a possible repair of the ramp entrance to the Borough Building, because we have a water damage problem in the ramp and in the front face of the ramp. Next, we're also looking for contractors to paint the Borough Hall and possibly do some repairs in the front end area. So those are the coming events for property. Thank you.
Bob, are you going to talk about the 10 Center lot?
Why don't you do that one? Or do you want me? One of the questions we have is the resolution of what are the borough's responsibilities versus Alan Smith as to who is to mow and plow and maintain the parking areas in front of and behind the old liquor store. We are trying to verify which areas were covered by the written agreement. Absent a supplemental written agreement, I don't understand how we can have an oral agreement changing a formal written agreement, which was extensively debated before council in the land swap that gave Alan the area behind the Starbucks. So to me, that's an open issue of who is to maintain that. And that is a main budget item for clearing that area and also maintaining it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we can choose not to plow it and not use it. I'm going to ask Mike to speak on that. Mike, if you recall, we sent over the documents for that and you reviewed it and described the solution as what Bob just mentioned, the verbal change, and Bob and Sue expressed concern about that. So right now, the only agreement we have with them is for us to use the permit parking in that area. So do we need something else?
You'll have to forgive me for a minute. I'm trying to remember our discussion on this issue and I
apologize because I did want to send that over to you in advance.
I'm trying to quickly look to see if I can find anything related on that. It's a little embarrassing. I can't remember advice.
No,
I
no,
gave
please don't be embarrassed.
I don't think you did. I think it was Valentina, maybe. And it was.
Yeah,
it was,
I'm looking through my old emails as we speak. I don't remember exactly what we said.
I don't think we need to resolve it tonight. The issue is we can't find. We've asked. It's been like 6 months now. We've been asking for a written agreement. It doesn't appear we have one. There may well have been a verbal agreement, but we can't get any details on what that is either. And so we're concerned about cost, obviously, but also liability. And so,
yeah, for liability, we do exchange our insurance policies with Alan Smith. So we do have that part taken care of. We have the agreement for the permits, and the rest of it was the emails that stated we would be using for parking, and that's what Mike had said was okay because it was a verbal change to an agreement. But I completely see your point about, is a verbal change to an agreement sufficient, or do we want something else?
Well, we couldn't find any evidence of the verbal agreement, Tara. I've asked you, I've asked Pat, I've asked everyone, and nobody can even give me an email or tell me who made this agreement or what it was or when it was. So and in terms of liability, I'm not sure I understand what you said. So if we're plowing it and someone slips and falls and gets hurt, the fact that we exchange insurance information, does that clarify who's liable for that if we get sued?
Mike?
Again, I'd rather not comment on this unless, mm-hmm. you know, we can take a look at what the agreement says and we can take a look at our notes and what the situation is, because I'd rather not say something incorrect right now and then have it floating out there for a month or 3 weeks, some incorrect information. I apologize. I in looking at the agenda, I wasn't sure that this we were going to be called upon to discuss this right now. I'd rather go back and take a look at what we did say to make sure, make sure we say the correct thing about what we said several weeks back.
Okay, I'm going to read it just so that we all hear it, and then let's follow up. So this is email from August 11th. Upon review of the land acquisition agreement.
Tara, is this an email from me?
Or Valentina?
Yeah, maybe it's best if we're not reading this aloud during a council meeting at this moment.
Okay.
If there's some issues about what our legal rights are, or what we can do, you know, maybe it's better if we share this with everyone and then, you know, that we can figure out what we're going to do moving forward, as opposed to discussing my legal advice on an issue in an open meeting. Yes. Yeah.
I have a quick question. So what happened when you contacted Alan Smith? He has nothing in writing either?
It's just exchange of emails and exchanging the liability aspects of the insurance policies. And then we have a agreement to use the land for permits. For permitted parking.
Tara, it sounds to me like this discussion should probably end now, and that it should, you know, there should be some research done by our solicitor, and then it come back if there's any discussion that council needs to have about adopting a new arrangement or whatever, that we put that on the agenda for the work session. Because right now we're all talking about little bits and snatches of things that we know, and our solicitor's just said that he doesn't have the materials in front of him. So can I put this on for the November, one of the November meetings to discuss again?
I agree with you.
I would request that Judy find the executed land acquisition agreement, because the one that was distributed to us is not signed. So Mike, you need to use the actual signed agreement as your starting point. And we don't have that.
And since I didn't have any of the backstory and I just, you know, read the bullet in the agenda, I actually had an entire different take on where this might be going. And I'll just share that directly with Mike, Valentina, and probably Tara.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Mike, I will forward that email to you. We will pick it up at the work session.
Sure. And all right, thanks. Valentina just pointed out to me that we were having this discussion in early August, which was over 2 months ago. And in COVID times, that's like 5 months ago. So I don't feel so bad about not remembering. So.
Oh, no, not at all.
It was this year, Mike.
Yeah, well, it's been a long year, Bob.
Yeah, I know. Don't I know? Thank you, everybody. And it's a very complicated problem, and we really have to understand our starting points.
So, all right, let's move on to the next topic.
Okay, this one, we talked at the last meeting about the signs going into the private driveway that also is the access to the police station. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about the gate that we have. I know that there's been a lot of discussion and maybe some angst about that gate. We made some commitments about when the gate would be open, when the gate would be locked. We've assigned responsibility to the police, and frankly, I really hope they have more important things to worry about than the gate. I know they get called away. This is in no way a criticism of what the police are doing, but the gate isn't being locked when we've said it was going to be. So it seems like there are a couple of pretty simple solutions. This is a private driveway. There's an easement for various property owners to get to their property. And I'm not an attorney, obviously. I don't think that's an easement just for generally taking a shortcut back and forth through there. There are also a lot of folks other than residents who are going through that gate. So I guess I think that there's a really simple solution, which right now there's the padlock with a combination that you can get the key and unlock it. And I guess the simplest, the cheapest, let me say it that way, the cheapest solution would be just to leave it locked and people would have to get use the combination every time. There's another option, which obviously would involve some expense, which is to install a new gate with a keypad like we have going into the borough offices so that it's keyless, if you will. But the cost of that would be, I don't know, I'm guessing at least $500. And I'm not sure that that makes sense right now. So I guess my suggestion is that we just leave it locked and people, the residents who have the combination can still use it anyway. So I don't see that as a major hardship for them.
And how about Chief coming back and forth during the day?
Whatever we need to do, we'll do.
Mm-hmm.
Susan, I want to.
And there may be other options. I spent some time looking at ways to have automatic gate closing and different types of locks that might be out there. We have an unusual gate right now. We have the fork latch that might have to get changed. We don't have the kind of gate with two walls that come together, which most of those keypads are made for. But there right. may be options that are cheaper than the $500 also.
Susan, I want to make a comment on what you said. I'm not sure whether the fire department, which owns the police station, has an easement over the adjoining properties from Green Street to the police station building, or whether the borough owns the road and the residents own either side of it.
No, it's all parcels. They're individual parcels. The easement goes across. It used to be one parcel with a brick row houses there, and then, gosh, number of decades ago, it was subdivided, and it was noted at that time there was a drive that was in common in the back, and then it was created that time as part of the subdivision into individual properties that easement would stay through there as a right-of-way.
So right put away, in a simple way, there is no road. It is a cut through everybody's backyard. Is
correct.
It is.
Right. So one concern that I have is that this is the access to the police station. And so I recognize the need for the different property owners to get to their own properties. But I would imagine that the chief would agree that we don't want a lot of people back there should the police need to get back and forth, and that's how they carry prisoners to the rear of the building. And the fact that we have a fence between the police station and Borough Hall, of course, that fence is from a long time ago, and the gate is a convenience so that we can go back and forth between the police department and Borough Hall. But beyond that, it's not, there is no pathway, or I don't know what they, in England, a walking path that everyone has right to use that goes to these people's backyard to then make a shortcut through into the borough lot. That's just not what it's for. I'm also concerned that there are the two pathways on either side of the police building that go from Liberty to the back. And again, they aren't supposed to be public walkways. And so the more we can do to discourage people from using them because they really aren't intended to be public, I think is the best. And so my suggestion is to put some kind of gate across those walks to keep the gate between the police station and Borough Hall locked. And anyone who goes through it is required to lock it again behind them. I mean, you're going to have the padlock in your hand. It's not like you're going to forget about it. and that we have a sign at where that driveway intersects Green Street, a big do not enter sign, authorized personnel only, or something on there to indicate that people are not supposed to be wandering back there. Because it seems like, from what I understand from what's been reported to me, is that this has become quite the public way, and that people are back there who don't belong back there and who think that what it is just is an alley, which it is not.
And the reality is that there is no easement from the 10-foot path through everybody's backyard to get to the gate. So mm-hmm. really nobody is allowed to walk on that stretch between the gate and, again, it is just a 10-foot easement for
right. And but for years they have been.
The only, without I guess permission from the fire department, actually, I don't know if that extends to permission from the renters being us and the police department. So really the only people that can use it are the renters, which is the police department. So I think that the lock should be locked at all times. And I don't think the combination should be shared with the other neighbors, because nobody really has the right to walk across that path.
Before anybody comments, let me tell you what Ron told me about maintenance. If we have a snow event, the borough will plow from Green Street to the end of the police department property, but not into the final two properties. I found that interesting. Ron will also shovel the walkways from Liberty Street on both sides of the police station. So that is included in what our maintenance program has been doing in the past, in which I assume will continue for this season. So we will plow that road, but not where the citizens park their cars across from their backyards.
No, because that's their private property.
Again, it's right. All their, remember Bob, again, there is no road and it's all their backyards. You know, it's just.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, but for, because we have to get the police in and out of there, we plow that area.
Yeah, we plow the 10-foot path.
Yep.
So what we can do is speak to somebody who is from a fence company who could take a look at it and say what options might be best. And whether we do the padlock or the push button, which might be simpler for the police.
Tara, but I think it's going to be much more expensive than you think, because if you have a gate that you want to have lock, you know, to swing shut again, that requires a lot more mechanism. It's going to require a new fence, a new gate, a new lock. It's going to be much bigger. I think that the quickest and simplest thing is just to say, just lock the gate. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I would like to hear from the chief about, you know, how often and how necessary it is to be able to get through that gate and how difficult it would be to undo, you know, just to undo the padlock and go through and lock it behind you.
When the district court's open during the daylight, we're through that very often. We're going back and forth because, you know, we're walking the district court. So yeah, we're using that gate often during the daylight hours.
This goes back to the 7 to 7 and the shift difference. When the shifts change at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., that's what Chief had suggested. And then Sue, you said it wasn't being done when it should be. That was on a weekend, right?
It's been in the evening and it's been on weekends, yes. Well, mm-hmm. I was going on the letter that you wrote, which said 8 to 5. So I can't.
She said to me business hours. And so that's what I thought of as being business hours. But when he looked at what made sense for the officers, it was the shift change. And that is basically still morning to evening.
So I guess my only mm-hmm. point was, I can't remember, frankly, what time it was, but it was certainly after 5. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It was after 7. Okay. But certainly the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's been open several times.
Our shift changes 7 p.m. and 7 a.m., so it was the easiest for the officer to remember to make the change at that particular time. There's been a couple times where a part-timer might not remember because they're just part-time. I think it's more the exception than the rule that it's not been locked during those 7 and 7 hours.
Yeah, and I believe that may be true. The weekend, I don't know what to say, but again, your guys get called away. They've got important things that they're trying to deal with. So I don't criticize them at all for not locking it at 7 o'clock. It's just not, I don't think, the appropriate way to handle it. Mm-hmm.
If they're going back and forth a lot to court during the day, it might be less of an inconvenience to shut and open it at 7 and 7 than it would be to do the little tumbler, lock it, and then do it back and forth throughout the day. And that I would leave to Chief.
Also, we could just, unlock it when we're going over to District Court or when we're visiting Barrow Hall, and then when we return to the station afterwards, we just lock it behind us.
Mm-hmm.
I just
read everyone think of that.
I was just going to say, I reserve the right to be 2 minutes late for every meeting if there's some sort of, if I got to run straight down Green, I'm going to be late.
Nicole, it's not for you. It's not a public way.
She's a member of Borough Council.
It doesn't matter. It's not a public way.
We're talking about the space between the two buildings on Liberty, not the drive. The drive is private. Nicole knows that.
I have definitely been walking down the drive, so I will not do that anymore.
I think the problem is that, it's become a shortcut, and as I understand it, it's become a shortcut for people, not just the people who live there, but people who live in the general area who are using it as thinking it's a public way, which it is not. Mm-hmm. And, and that the Rocco's employees are using it to go back and forth, that's not right. If people are using it to go back and forth because they see it, it's paved, it looks like an alley, that's not right. And I think the only way we're going to stop people from doing that, and if you had people who walked across your backyard all the time because it was easier to get across your backyard to go somewhere else, I think you'd feel a little bit differently. I think we're creating a situation that it isn't right.
I think everybody's agreed we want to have it locked. That I thought we were getting into now the part about what happens during the day and when people have to go over to court from the police station.
So I think that probably we could leave this now and let the chief hopefully decide what the, minimum openness, like I heard him just make a suggestion that it could be open while they're over at the district, but then closed again while it's when they come back. So that would decrease the amount of time that it's left open. So I think we should wait for the chief to give a proposal on how little open time they could make do with.
I think that would be the most convenient if we're just, when we're leaving the station to go either to the Borough Hall or to District Court, we unlock it, leave it unlocked till we return, and then just lock it up behind us on our way back to the station. I think that'll limit the number of time that it's open and also limit the number of inconvenient times of, fumbling with the lock, going back and forth.
And then you don't have to remember to do it at 7 and 7 because it's always done when you return.
Right.
One of the things that I think we're also missing, and to Julia's point, which I think is very accurate, is that the access from Green Street is what is the enticing part for people to walk and or drive. And the time that the police need to get in and out of there is A, when they're changing shifts, and B, when they're bringing in prisoners. If that has a bigger gate or a bigger area that makes it difficult for people to walk through, that would solve part of that problem, that would solve the problem for people to have access to the gate issue, which then it can be for the police to walk back and forth. But I think the entrance off of Green Street is the biggest primary access for people to think that it's a public right-of-way, like Julia's, you know, alluding to. And I think that's perfectly right. But I don't know how you can close off that access way. I don't know how many of those residents park back there. But I don't think any of them do. I think it's just an access for the police department as much as anything. So that's...
Yeah, I don't know if the residents want a gate. Yeah, but we could make the sign bigger.
I don't think the sign's going to work, but, you know...
Does anybody know who owns the barn or the garage?
Lisa and Ken.
Is located?
Yes.
Yes, I know who owns the barn.
So if we get permission from them to put up a better sign...
Well, we already talked about...
Signs on a pole.
We already talked about the signs last time. Sorry, my battery's dying. And we agreed to do two things. One is put no through traffic. And the other one was to move the private driveway sign so that it's actually perpendicular to traffic and people can see it when they're driving in. So I agree with you. It's not going to, or sorry, Mr. Mayor, that it's not going to solve the problem 100%. But I think it'll help because you honestly can't see that sign until you've already turned.
And the other thing is, if it is a new sign, maybe it can clarify, you know, pedestrian, there's no pedestrian access either in addition to vehicle. You know.
Makes sense.
Well, if it says private property, do not enter, that tells people not to go in there. It is private property.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that would cover both.
Yeah. So... should we talk to Pat about talking to Scott about getting a new sign? Is that the protocol?
Mm-hmm.
I already did that.
Yeah, we decided that last week.
Yeah. So so just one question, because it's not clear to me right now. We're talking about only having it open when you go through to court or to Borough Hall. But right now, all the residents have the combination to the lock, right? So if we're trying to stop traffic, we haven't really addressed that piece.
Well, the residents on that block can lock it again.
They can, but again, it's not a public access way.
No, I think the combination should be changed and it should not be shared with the residents.
And they are going to say they've been using it for years and why all of a sudden now they can't.
Because there's an issue.
You're going to say that.
Pardon?
The reason the gate is closed is to protect the neighbors. So it's counterintuitive to let them have access to it.
They don't have the right to cross that strip of land between that 10-foot path and the gate. Even if they do have access to walk down, and I'm not sure that they have the right to continue beyond their own property further on that path, you know, toward to get to the gate if they're walking along the back. You know, it depends on how the easement is written. Does it say each property has the right to get to their own property? That would mean they really shouldn't walk any further.
No, I read the zoning agreement for the subdivision. And it refers to a right-of-way that was pre-existing, and that's it. So it doesn't specify that you can't walk further or not. So I would defer to our solicitor on that.
It still doesn't cover the piece of property from the 10-foot path to the gate.
Marv, you can go talk to them.
Well, we have Caroline Bennett on the meeting here. She's one of the neighbors. Why don't we ask her what she thinks?
Hi, everyone.
Hi. Hi, Caroline.
I've expressed my concerns to several safety, security, and privacy. I was here when the gate was put in originally back in 2000, and I have a letter from Marcia Skull, who I've shared, shared this letter with the police back in 2018. and I'm sure you can find that letter yourselves if you haven't already seen it, but that gate was put in to allow for easy access between Borough Hall and the police station and from the police station to Borough Hall when the police station was moved from Borough Hall to its current location, and that was it. Several of the residents at that time expressed concerns about that gate and several other items. And we got the commitment from the borough at that time that they would not only restrict public park in the alley, but they'd restrict public foot traffic in the alley, restrict public vehicle track in the alley, monitor the closure of the gate. There's a whole list of things in that letter. Now, since then, there have been not only a change in owners of the properties here that are adjacent to the driveway. I'm the only one here that still exists who was involved directly in how this unfolded back then. So we've had a change in residents that I don't believe know the exact history. We've had a change in residencies, ownership rather, I should say, in the surrounding streets on Liberty, on Green, the next block of Liberty over on State. So a number of people that have since moved in don't know the history. We have a higher density of people. We have a completely different dynamics in terms of number of police vehicles and police officer and staff. We don't have the Baptist Church anymore. We have the Lubavitch. The amount of vehicles and people that have brought in has steadily increased over the years. They now have an armed guard in front of that every Saturday morning and on special events. I have shared different examples of people roaming in on both sides of the police station into the back of the police station, from people entering on Green and going through the gate, from people going through the gate from Borough Hall parking lot down to Green, from people going through Borough Hall parking lot straight out to Liberty, most of whom are unknown to me. And so, do you have any specific questions? Like I said, my concerns are safety, security, and privacy. I want to be able to sit in my backyard and not see strangers roaming past at any time. And I don't want to have to be put in the position anymore to have to police my own property.
So what I hear, Caroline, is you would like that gate closed except when the police need to go in and out.
That would certainly be, a step in the right direction. Yep. Much better than I think
what
we currently have.
Thank you very much for your participation.
You're welcome. Thank you for the discussion.
So are we okay with that next step? Yeah. Or?
Well, I think we've got a list of action items. You've already taken care of the sign. We're waiting for Scott to put it in. Does he have those available? Does he have to order them?
I don't know. That's the question I asked, and I haven't gotten an answer yet. I said a reminder. Yeah.
And now right. And then we have the sign on the building. As a temporary measure to convey to the public right away, Chief put the horse up, and I know Caroline didn't like that either. But we do want to put a sign on the building saying private. If there was a gate to be put in, that would have to be worked out with the neighbors off of Green Street there. I'm sorry, not Green, Liberty. But we want to put a sign up saying private on a police building as well. So between the two signs and the lock, I think that covers everything, right?
I think it's a big improvement.
Chief, would you want signs at the front end of the police station to tell people not to pass through there? Would that be helpful?
Yes, we have a temporary sign on the walkway. It's on Sawhorses, sign saying not public access. By Borough Police. I think that's limited some of the traffic, but we need something a little more permanent than what we have now.
Okay, well, we'll come over and look at it next week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I looked at some things online, and what I was thinking to do is get something on our ordinance that we don't necessarily have to go to HARB, and perhaps go to Boyd Geyer, see what they have. Unless we can get something that looks decent online.
Tara, those informational kinds of signs are not required to go to HARB.
Right, as long as it's small enough.
Well, right, but they're public safety signs and things like mm-hmm. that. Those are different than advertising a business.
Right, but we want it to look nice.
So
that's
I guess
I was getting at.
I guess the one question I still have, it's not clear to me what we decided about the combination. There's a suggestion made that the combination should be changed and not given to residents. Are we doing that? Or I wasn't sure that was the end point.
I suggest we do that. And then I suggest that we try what the chief has suggested about keeping it locked, except when they're going to and fro, and that they will, when they return to the station, they lock the gate behind them. And that will at least keep the gate locked most of the time. And let's try it, see how it works.
And I also agree with the chief's proposal and with changing the combination and not dispersing it.
So those aren't strangers though back there. If the residents are using it, I mean, Caroline, for your concerns, it was mainly strangers. If your neighbors use it, does that bother you?
Well, you know, I don't have control over immediate neighbors. I like I said, they don't have the history as to mm-hmm. why that gate was right. put in the first place, to my knowledge, And, you know, we already, we're on top of each other here. There's already a number of concessions made. You know, regarding, you know, all of us living here so closely together. So what is your specific question, Tara?
Oh, it was how you feel about them having access to the gate, since they're not strangers.
Well, you know, I have to say, the less people I think who have that combination, who have the need to have that combination, is where I'm coming from.
Mm-hmm. So we can tell the neighbors, and this is sort of to council, not to Caroline specifically, but we can tell the neighbors that, you know, sorry, we're not doing this anymore. It's locked and that's that. Is that what I'm hearing from council?
I think so.
Yeah, I think that's what we do, and we say it's for security reasons that we have decided to keep the gate locked and not share the combination. And I think they'll be fine. I mean, they won't. But the point is that before we put that gate in, that was a fence. They couldn't get through there.
No, I totally get it. And I get Caroline's point. She's the one who's been here. She watched it unfold over the years.
Well, it's our property and the gate is for our convenience and we can control it. We don't have to provide access to people who don't need to use it.
So I think we have a plan.
Thank you.
All right. Does everybody feel comfortable we addressed this sufficiently? Can we move on?
Yes,
I do.
Thank you.
All right. Zoning, Julia?
Okay. So we are getting to the end here. We are now picking up on issues that were brought up at previous E-code sessions and trying to finish them up. I'm going to share screen here. And I had been putting up a number of things, actually even till today. And I'm going to put the discussion guide up that has some more things that were actually added since I put the last one up, and I just couldn't put anything else up in share file. So just get out of this here.
Okay, so when we talked about, let me make this a little bit bigger. When General Code pointed out that we didn't have any park rules, and so I worked with Valentina. She gave me another ordinance from Plymouth Township. I sent a list of things that could be regulated to the rec board, got feedback back from them. And then we created a list of park rules. Did anyone have any questions on that list? And I can put it up if you want to go through it. Hearing none, should I move on or are we good?
Good.
We're good? All right. So we will, and I guess my question to Valentina is, the park rules, can we just put this in E-code or should we be passing an ordinance?
You can just put it in E-code unless council thinks that there's a pressing need to have this ordinance in place. You know, for example, if there were things happening in the parks currently that were issues, but I don't remember you discussing any of that, so it can just go in with E-code.
Okay, yeah, I haven't heard that there have been any issues in the parks that we haven't been able to deal with and that we didn't, and then the need for a list of rules just, didn't seem to be a pressing one. Okay, the second one is the peddling and soliciting ordinance, and this one needed a complete rewrite. And so there was a, what was that? The draft, where's my, lost my thing here. Okay, so I do have a couple,
I think it's,
something's echoing.
I think it's Tara's.
Tara?
Hi, sorry about that. I was attempting to put earbuds in. Sorry, go on.
Okay.
Right. No, I'm using a phone. But I'm looking at it on the screen so I can see what you've got. So.
Okay. Is it big enough on the screen for everybody? I guess so. Okay. So this is a complete rewrite of the chapter on peddling and soliciting. There is one item that was included that I questioned. Valentina said, well, some municipalities do this, but I thought I'd run it past Borough Council and see what you think. Some municipalities don't allow the person who is doing the door-to-door soliciting to park on a residential street while they're doing it. I guess that would mean that they would have to park in the municipal lot. Or keep pulling into driveways. Does anybody have any objection to allowing the person who is going door to door to park on a street in a residential neighborhood?
Julie, I have a more fundamental question. Why is the control of this type of business under a criminal nature ordinance as compared to a permit regulation under municipal office regulation?
Well, I'm going to send that to our solicitor. Valentina, would you like to answer that?
I guess, could you rephrase the question? I'm not quite sure I understand.
This is a criminal statute. Why isn't it a business permit statute? This is criminal. All of this is criminal in nature. And why are we burdening the police department with regulating business?
This is a township ordinance that is just able to regulate who is able to go door to door. And that, I guess, in the sense it deals with criminal statute because the person who is making this application has to show the police department that they haven't committed any crimes and things like that. But this is not really a dealing with a criminal issue. This
why
is just a local
why
ordinance.
Is there a necessity for any criminal background to do business in Newtown Borough?
Because in most places you do not want someone with a criminal background going door to door, peddling and soliciting as they're going door to door.
Why are you making that assumption to begin with?
Making what assumption?
That these people have criminal records, and what difference does it make? Why, if they have served whatever sentence they've been, 1 ounce of marijuana, they got a misdemeanor charge, why can't they go in business selling Tupperware door to door?
Bob, if someone we don't recognize is going around on knocking on doors, okay, the first thing you do is you call the police and you say, there is somebody I don't know in this neighborhood who is knocking on doors. And if they don't have a permit to do it, then, you know, you have to be suspect that they're looking to see whether the house is empty or not.
We had solicitors come up and down the street
calls for people
for the trash haulers. We didn't call the police on them. We have people coming to the door.
I got a call asking who this person was. So, you know, I don't know. It seems to me that we don't all municipalities have some sort of ordinance like this, Mike.
Many do. Many regulate peddling and soliciting because many people, they want there to be some sort of regulations about who can come to their doors. And Bob, to your point about somebody who is 35 years old and he works for a window replacement company, and when he was 16 or 19, he got arrested for a small amount of marijuana. I don't think that's really what you're trying to pick up. I think you're trying to pick up the guy who's been criminally charged with maybe some sort of violent offense, or maybe has been criminally charged with swindling people out of, you know, being involved in certain sort of scams or something along those lines. And I think that's why most municipalities put these kind of background checks and these type of limitations into their peddling and soliciting ordinances.
Am I correct that this ordinance talks about arrest as compared to convictions? If somebody's arrested and they're cleared of charges, are they prohibited from getting a permit?
I'm looking right now.
I don't believe so. But Valentina's
saying just convictions, and it's also limiting to them of what's known as crimen falsi, any kind of fraud, theft, any crime of dishonesty is what it's limiting to convictions for those types of crimes.
But it's convictions, not arrest.
It says that you're guilty and have or has been convicted.
Okay.
So does this apply to all of your political door knockers, or is it a different? Because that's called canvassing too, or is that considered to be a different?
They're exempt. No,
they're exempt. That's speech. And you can't present. Yeah, this is people conducting business. This is people trying to sell you aluminum siding or subscriptions to magazines or other things of that nature.
So political candidates,
religious organizations, social service organizations can still knock on your door.
So if you're soliciting for the Red Cross or something like that, you're exempt from this ordinance?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for the clarifications.
Although canvasser is under definition, it's treated in a different way than hawker or peddler, because nobody under canvasser appears to be selling anything.
Well, and also it's under exemptions. Okay, under exempt section 107-6, exemptions, charitable, religious, and nonprofit organizations, our tax-exempt organizations are exempt. Representatives of political organizations and political candidates are exempt. And activities and arrangements having prior consent of the occupant are exempt. And then the other one that I find interesting is farmers selling their produce out of their own truck. I assume that's based on a state law.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when the Girl Scouts are selling Girl Scout cookies, they don't need a license, but the window salesman does.
Correct.
So there were two other, so let me ask you about the parking on a residential street. Are you all in agreement that it's okay for them to park on the street? Does anyone object to that?
No. And so did parking apply to people that were exempt?
The parking thing is, well, if you're exempt, you're exempt.
Okay, so in other words, anybody under the exemptions would be able to park on the street while doing it.
Right. If you're knocking doors for pet environment, you can park on the street, you know, the block where you're knocking doors.
Right. So this the way it's written right now, it says he or she shall not park commercial vehicles on residential streets while engaging in door-to-door solicitation. So if you're, I guess, let's say you're a whitetail employee and you're driving a whitetail truck, that according to this, you would not be able to park it on a street while you're knocking on the doors trying to get people to sign up to use the garbage service. So, I mean, I'm fine with them parking on the street, but I just want to make sure everyone else is okay with that.
I'm good.
You're okay? All right. Okay, then the second one, and then there's another one that actually came up later. She pointed it out, is that the fee schedule that's noted in this ordinance as it's written right now does not reflect our current fee schedule. And if we would like to keep our current fee schedule, which is so much for a 1 month, I actually put it up on share file, but we have one. It's a one day, a 6 month, and 1 year license fee. Whereas the way the ordinance is written, the sample ordinance is written right now, it's actually only a 30-day license.
Well, I think just like anything else, everything should be a fee schedule so you don't have to rewrite the actual document.
Right. Okay. But are you okay with keeping our current fee schedule or our way of charging? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. And there also was a revision to the draft application that was put together based on the chief's feedback is that the borough does not do the criminal history check, but the applicant needs to provide that. And everybody's okay with that? Actually, that's what we're doing. So just wanted to let you know that revision is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it should be. Just like if you go to work at a volunteer place, you're the one that has to do, you know, supply the background check to work there.
Right.
So Julia, I also had recommended some changes to the individual application.
Oh, okay.
There are several things on there that seem strange to me. You have to have a photograph taken within the last 3 months, and you have to have a copy of your government issued picture ID. And yet the application for your date of birth.
Oh, I think Tara might have to go on mute. I'm just going to mute her.
Okay. And yet, it asks for your gender. It asks date of birth and age, because apparently we can't calculate that. Height, weight, hair color, eye color. Why? We've already got two photos. I don't understand. That seems unnecessary.
So it's so the police department has a physical description written down and then also a picture that they can use for a license or they can physically affix to it, because we can say someone has is 6'5 and has brown hair, but we don't really know what they look like if we get a phone call and we have to go identify them, kind of thing. So it's just two forms of a way to know who this person is.
Seems redundant to me and a little bit intrusive, but okay.
Well, I can understand, like, if someone knocks on your door or you see somebody walking down your street and you're wondering if they are legitimate and you call a police station, you say, well, there's somebody on my street and he looks like this. And then the police can go look at a written record and say, okay, yeah, we have a license for that person. And they do look like that. So it's just another, it's for the file. It's not, they aren't carrying that around on their body. Valentina, is this application one that's been used in other municipalities?
It's based off some things. It's not exactly how other municipalities do it, but it all of them basically have the same information. I did like some aspects of other ones. For example, the first page, I kind of, you know, was inspired by some other townships because I liked how it explains the ordinance so that the person doesn't have to go and look it up. So all the information they need is right there. And so it's not exactly, but inspired.
Okay. And Chief, does this application look reasonable to you since you're going to have to deal with it?
Yes, it does.
Okay. And again, Valentina, can we just do this update as part of the e-code, or do we need to, is this revision need to be done more immediately?
So you can wait. I remember Chief saying that you only get about 5 of these a year. So if you wanted to hold off, that's totally fine. It's up to council.
Okay, is council okay with just doing this part of the e-code as opposed to a new ordinance?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
I am. Is there time?
Is there time what?
Oh, before submitting the e-code to have Valentina look into this. And we should be good, right?
Look into what?
The ordinance.
Oh, it would be a matter of whether we felt we needed to update the ordinance right away. So our choice is we would put this, the e-code has a chapter in there, but it needs to be rewritten. If we substitute this chapter, it will go into effect when we adopt the new code, which by my figure is going to be sometime late to 2021, the way things are going. If so, we need to update this ordinance quickly, then we would want to do it as a new ordinance and not wait until the e-code is done.
Yeah, we may want to do that.
Do which?
To do it alongside.
Do it more quickly than waiting for e-code.
What does everyone think? I would think so.
I mean, it doesn't seem like it's an emergency, but.
I don't know that there's been an issue with it. And I think what the chief was saying that we get 5 applications a year or something like that. Is that what you were saying, chief?
If that many.
Yeah.
If that
okay.
Many.
Are you going to wait, chief?
So it doesn't seem
to happen. So maybe okay. I would just add so, that if the chief gets any applications between now and whenever you approve the e-code, that maybe, he just gives me a heads up so I can make sure I tell him, you know, which aspects of the ordinance maybe not to apply to a certain person. Because there was a concern that aspects of the ordinance maybe weren't totally up to code with the current law. So that's maybe something you should keep in mind. But it's up to council.
Yeah, I'm fine.
By that, Valentina, you mean the exceptions from the people that aren't required to have the soliciting permits or required to obtain one?
Sorry.
By saying that some of them weren't in conformance, you mean by some of the individuals that should have been exempt from having to apply for one? I have noted that.
Yeah, I didn't hear you at first. That's exactly it.
Yeah, and I've gone by the, you know, the statute saying that if they weren't exempt, I wasn't requiring them to get a permit.
That was the only concern. I should be clear.
In conformance, yes.
Okay.
We were taking care of not making.
I'm sure.
You did that.
Perfect.
Okay, good. So the rewrite of the application, though, should the chief start using that? I mean, that's not part of the ordinance, right? That's just alongside it.
That's not in the ordinance itself. So you can just give it to chief now if council approves it.
Okay. All right, so we can think about that, whether we want to revise the ordinance, the application that chief is using, just continue using the old one, and update it later.
Okay, I see. So that's I thought we needed to do the ordinance to have the application, but we can have the application done and then update it for the ordinance later.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so I would suggest maybe that we'll talk about that, talk to the chief and decide whether we should be revising, you know, just starting with a new application starting now or whether to wait. Okay, I'm going to move on to chapter 425. Okay, this is the rental property chapter. This is referring to a registry that is in our ordinance, but apparently has not been utilized for a while. When we talked about it the last in September, we had pretty much decided that we would keep the registry, but that we might be discussing different registration requirements. My suggestion for this one actually is, since we want to talk about short-term rentals at some time in the near future, that we leave this chapter as written, with the exception of changing the penalty language in the e-code, and that we can talk about the registration requirements when we're talking about short-term rentals, because I think they're going to overlap. And if we come up with a short-term rental ordinance at that point, that we can also throw in the regular rental property registration requirements, if that seems
The only thing I would say is that, as opposed to calling it a later date, you know, I think we should do it as a separate ordinance, because we should fast track the entire, you know, rental property, you know, including longer and shorter term rentals. So we should do it as a separate ordinance, so we can do it quicker than the ECO.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Julia, can I interrupt you just for a second, please?
Sure.
Yes. I'm just, Michelle's hanging with us because, you know, she's here for us in the meeting. But right now that it's 10 and we're going through the e-code ordinances, is there any reason for Michelle to stay? Do we need her for any of these, or can we let her go to enjoy the rest of her evening?
Thank you, but I think I'm needed for the very last one. But Julia, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Last one.
Do you want to jump ahead to that?
Yeah, she's sticking around for sidewalks. Yeah, we're almost there. Actually, the only other thing, and yes, I agree with you, Marv, about not waiting really a long time for the rental thing, but I know that Tara's already working on that, so that's happening outside of the process that I'm doing. And I suggest that we address the issue of rental property registration along with the short-term rental ordinance that that we will be looking at in the near future.
Yeah, I originally had it on for tonight, and then as more and more things came on, I said, we have to move it forward. So,
So, okay. All right. Skateboards, 447. What we were going to talk about was redefining the commercial district where skateboarding was not permitted. Looked at the zoning map and realized our commercial district is essentially from center, the B1, B2, and B1.
that takes care of all State Street basically. And that would be considered our commercial district. And I also reworded this a little bit to put public parks separate from that, because the way the wording was, it sounded like they could only not skateboard in a public park that was in the commercial district. We have public parks that are not in the commercial district, and we don't want skateboarding there. Does anybody have any questions about that definition? Okay, the second thing that was brought up, Sue brought up that under violations and penalties, we were talking about you get an initial warning, and then it's the second or subsequent violation where you are subject to penalties. She suggested adding the word written before the word warning. And I wanted to ask the chief if he had any input on this. Would you give them a written warning if you found somebody skateboarding where they weren't supposed to be? Is chief still here?
He was.
Yes, he is. Chief, are you here? Maybe not.
I don't know. I could see it would. If I were chief, I would say, hey, just to let you know, you shouldn't be here. You got to stay away from this area. Take it over to the other place. The kid would be like, oh, okay, chief. And then that would be the warning. So is the written to have that documentation that you've done it? Is that the purpose of it? Because it seems to counter to the way I've seen chief operate, and we'll let him say his piece when he comes back to join us.
So the only reason I suggested written is we've in my work experience, we had several things where we did verbal warnings. And the problem with that is 10 different people give a verbal warning and nobody knows that the person's done it 10 times, right? Because it's not documented. That was my only thinking.
Oh, chief is back.
I'm back. I was looking for the combination or the instructions on changing the combination lock. That's got to be here somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. I'll take that.
Sorry about that. So what was the question? I'm sorry.
Okay. The question is, we're talking about skateboards, and there is a subsection in here that says about violations of penalties. And basically they get the first warning, the first violation is a warning. And then second and subsequent violations, then they're subject to the penalties, which is
okay.
a fine.
Okay.
So the question is, would you be issuing a written warning or documenting it in some way so that you would know that when you caught the person doing it the second and third time, that was the second and third time?
We would document it.
Should we add written in there?
Right, we would document it in our records management system, and then we would have access to that to find out whether or not the individual had been given a warning prior. So therefore, we can always, if it's a citation for the violation, we can come back to the station and say, oh yeah, we've already given this individual a warning and they have done a subsequent offense, and we could always file the citation that way after the fact.
Does the person receive something in writing the first time or not?
Typically not. Not for that type of violation. If somebody receives a warning on a traffic violation, there's PennDOT forms or state police forms that we give somebody, so they have a written warning and that's tabulated. But even that written warning then just gets transferred back onto our records management system when the officer gets back to the station. So there really isn't any kind of written warning for that type of violation that we would have. We can always make one if that's what council would like.
So I'm the one who suggested that be put in. And my only concern is that, again, if multiple people give a warning, then not everyone would know, but you address that. If you have it in a log there, that's fine. I agree that a written warning to someone doing this for the first time seems a bit harsh. So I'm fine taking written back out.
Okay.
The next one is the special event sec. We're gonna come back to this too. Valentina is still investigating what language we can use, and we'll talk about that next month.
Okay, on to streets and sidewalks. So this is what we need Michelle's assistance with. So we decided when we met last time on this chapter, which was the 8th of September, which like Mike says, seems like it was like ages ago, that we were going to write a new ordinance for streets and sidewalks to update things so that we could get that taken care of more quickly. What I've listed here are questions that we need to answer. And then based on what council decides, then we will be presenting the complete new ordinance to you at a later date that will address, you know, all the other pages and pages and pages of changes. So the first one has to do with repairing a sidewalk. And this is talking about if someone wants to repair a sidewalk, what materials they're allowed to use. And particularly if they have a blacktop sidewalk, what materials can they use? Right now, if they have blacktop or bitumen sidewalk, they have to replace it with concrete unless the council permits another material. And the SALDO lists materials for sidewalks, including that should be chosen on the basis of what's on adjacent properties and should be finished, standard finished concrete, bluestone, clay brick, or concrete modular bricks that look like brick. And so the question is, do you want to permit those materials directly for someone doing a repair of a sidewalk so they don't have to come to council and ask permission? And do you want council to have the option to allow them to leave it as blacktop? So what does council want to do?
Julia, if somebody has an asphalt driveway that carries all the way to the street with asphalt, so the sidewalk is asphalt, if they go to resurface that, is that a repair that requires the asphalt to be replaced by concrete?
Well, that's a very good question. Our SALDO says that the sidewalk material is what governs where there's a sidewalk. And Michelle, you can pipe up anytime on this one. The apron is supposed to be concrete.
That's a good question that maybe the solicitor will have to think about and answer. Is it a driveway? Is it a concrete apron? Is it a sidewalk? Is it all three of them? That section of the ordinance talks about sidewalks specifically. I think there's a section in the ordinance that says when you talk about sidewalks, you talk about concrete aprons and curb all at the same time. But maybe we need to look at that. By we, I mean with help from the solicitor's office.
We have to make a decision whether we will permit asphalt aprons and asphalt sidewalks. That's the fundamental question. If they're grandfathered in, that would be one thing. But hereafter, what do we want to do?
And do you only require them to be concrete sidewalks or any other material if there's sidewalks along the street? What if there's no sidewalks along that street? Do you still allow it to be a bituminous driveway?
Let's deal with the first one first. If there's already brick, concrete, bluestone, whatever, other than asphalt, should we permit asphalt sidewalks and aprons?
My vote would say no.
Yeah, no. I think this ordinance says no, you can't.
Yeah, and we just had somebody who subdivided change all their asphalt sidewalk to concrete. So I think, you know, it's pretty well established, and in the Planning Commission as well, that we don't want that, and we've not wanted it before also.
We just had a case earlier this year where someone redid the asphalt on their driveway, and that's what they have as their sidewalk and as the apron. And to me, this says when in need of repair, it has to be replaced, but it was considered a routine repair and we didn't make them replace it. So I think there's some sort of clarification needed.
Maybe the difference between repair and replacement. I mean, I agree. If you need repair, if you're crack sealing and putting a new top on your pre-existing asphalt drive that becomes your apron, that's different than installing one.
But fully replacing. Yeah. According to the way this is written, it says when in need of repair, sidewalk shall be replaced with concrete or other material.
Yeah.
Well, there's also repair and then there's regular maintenance. So when you, you know, put the stuff down on your right. blacktop every couple years, that's not really repair, that's maintenance.
That's what I was thinking too. Mm. Like if you're just fixing
right, if you have
cracks.
Right, and that's maintenance, not repair.
And you wouldn't need a permit for that either.
If you have cracks on a sidewalk, you have to replace that broken concrete or stones.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that a little bit later, too.
Can I break this down a little bit? It sounds to me like there are some discussions that I should engage with the solicitor on about at what point is something maintenance and when does it become a repair and right. pick something else. Let me further clarify that. But let's start with the first thing. If you are in fact replacing or repairing your sidewalk and you need to replace the materials, okay? If you currently have a blacktop sidewalk, are you going to, can we permit them not only to replace it with concrete, but could they also have replace it with brick or bluestone? Are you okay with allowing them to have those options?
Because right now,
the only thing they could replace is concrete.
I think that they should be able to do that. And we also need to, just because, I mean, or at least talk about that other curbing that isn't brick color. Remember we-
Right.
Yes.
We approved like a gray. I mean, it's just kind of like right. a new color out there, right. but I could see that being maybe a little bit more popular. Mm-hmm.
I feel like you agree with me to use allow the other materials. The other half of that sentence says, unless council permits another material if more suitable for the immediate neighborhood. If so, in that case, it would be okay, well, gray will look better. And then council say, okay, gray's fine.
Okay, that's fine.
Do you also want council to have the option to say, yeah, sure, you can keep a blacktop sidewalk? Or are we gonna say, no, you don't have the option of keeping a blacktop sidewalk?
I don't think it should be an option.
Okay. I agree.
All right, so we'll take that out then, okay.
Julia.
Yeah.
To relieve council of all the work of telling them to put in the brick or the, you know, one of the three options, we should just put it in here. What are the available options?
That's what we just said. Because if we put in that comment or other materials permitted in 486-22D, those materials are listed below in italics.
Do we want to add to that italic list the gray colored modular bricks?
Well, that's a question. When this was put together, the thought was what the borough really wanted to do was to preserve the old-fashioned brick look, but we knew that when people were putting in new brick sidewalks, they weren't really brick, that a lot of the times they were concrete that looked like brick, and we thought since it was a better material overall, it was going to last longer, that was fine, but it still gave us the look of brick. And so that's why the color of natural brick was put in there. So we aren't gonna have somebody say, well, I want a blue sidewalk, and someone else says, well, I want a gray sidewalk. you're getting away from that old look of
the Okay, that's fine. And I don't think it happens that often, so.
Okay, and people can come to council, and if council thinks it looks nice, then great. Okay.
I got a question.
All right, so then the next step.
Yeah. Julia, if somebody is repairing the surface between the street and the sidewalk, do we require a new curb to be put in? Like we just did at the Mercer Street parking lot at the corner of Court and Mercer.
Okay. That is beyond the things that we're discussing right now. So that's a good question, but let's kind of set that aside and see if we can get through these others first. And then it sounds like there's various clarifications of things that we have to work out with the solicitor.
Because that question was asked by the property owner and we said you had to put in the curb.
Right, okay. So if you'll notice that the next sections that we're looking at to get council's input, this 480-40 and 480-46, right now, our current ordinance requires property owners to maintain existing curbs and to install new. Okay, so the question is that, does council want to continue to have that be in our ordinance?
Well, let me preface the comment by saying when we do Liberty Street, the curbs at the firehouse and the police station have to be repaired at a cost of approximately $9,000. Are we sending a bill to the fire department for $9,000?
Well, the building that the police department is in, we are, I believe we are responsible, the borough is responsible for all the maintenance and all the rest of that. So whatever's in front of the police department is our bill.
Okay, so $8,500 goes to the fire department.
Well,
it's gonna be a big bill.
Yeah, I think that in our budget discussions, we did say that we would like to try to, since we do give money to the NFA.
I think it's all out of the scope of really the discussion on the ordinance.
Right.
And back to this discussion, we've had a property owner, you know, one in particular, from this year's project, expressing distress over the cost of replacing the curbing that was broken as part of the road program. And so that's something, Sue, that you had brought up as well. And, you know, it made us somewhat uncomfortable in some ways. In other ways, we really see the rationale behind it, and this is how we do it.
I think that curbs are part of the road program. And I think that they're material, if you will, to the road stability. And I would go as far as to say sidewalks too, but that's beyond this discussion. I think that curbs should be paid for by the borough as part of the road program.
So I believe that the issue is that it's not just curbs, it's the aprons to the driveways, and they're when you do there, it's like linear square feet. I mean, they're just super expensive. So, I mean, personally, I think it, I mean, I can't imagine like making that decision tonight, but.
I'm with you, Nicole. I feel like this is a really big decision that we really need to think on, read about, come back
to. Right. We've been putting it off, but all right, so think about it. I think my personal feeling about driveway ramps are there for the convenience of the property owner. I personally,
yeah, but not when it comes to Michelle's engineering. It becomes part of the whole way that the road is. I don't know, right, Michelle?
If you're talking about something that came up last year, Nicole, yeah, then that was more of a factor of the way that driveway apron was installed and the lack of there being curb along that part of the street, I believe.
Yeah, I know, but the driveway apron became a problem because it's not just for the property owner, it affects the rest of the street.
Correct.
Or can affect.
Because of the way it was constructed And remember, there was a problem with the slope also. There was a problem with the slope. Yes.
I'm just saying, I mean, I don't think that when you're doing all your formulas that driveway aprons aren't part of it, I guess. It affects the street. I mean, a lot of times that's where like pooling can happen. I think curbs are important though. I mean, I definitely want to talk about it for sure.
So just to do full disclosure, as strongly as I feel that we should pay for them, I talked to Michelle and Joe when we were out looking at the roads for this year and was told that the trend is the other direction, that more places are making the residents pay as opposed to saying, no, 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 we'll pay. So I'm bucking the trend, certainly.
Yeah, and it goes in ways both ways. And I think at this hour at 10:24, we can come back to the what do we all do together to minimize the individual impact, but then everybody has to pay a little bit more for it. So can we come back to that later then, Julia?
Yes we okay. are. And I bring it up to discuss because this is the second meeting it's come up with no resolution. So let's it's going to come back. So
it needs its own official special spot with special amount of time and preparation.
Yeah. Well, I know. And well, zoning is the, at the end, but this is going to move up because it's going to become an ordinance. It's going to come under engineering. So it's going to come earlier. Okay, the second item is going to be easier. Right now, the borough is not requiring property owners to pay for the cost of handicap ramps. And I just wanted to make sure that everyone is still okay with that. And I assume you would be. Paying for whenever you do a road program, someone who has the corner property is stuck with two ramps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's borough. Okay. Yeah. All right.
You might want to.
The next one.
I was just going to add, I don't know, do we have anything that talks about, like, usually the fire hydrants are right there too, so sometimes it could go a little bit, like that whole corner, is that somewhere different?
I'm not sure what you're saying.
So making the curb in front of a fire hydrant if it's not already there, or fixing the curb in front of the fire hydrant. No, we make the property owner do that.
That I don't know, but I will put down here.
All right, I was just wondering, because a lot of times they are on the corner and I feel like we just kind of finish it off, but if it's not actually stated, then maybe we should just see if it's anywhere.
Okay. I think the one we did at the corner of Court and Mercer at the end of the driveway, we paid for.
I think that's that little bit, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that that's the way it should be, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And we also extended the curb.
Yeah. When Borough Council had to deal with handicap ramps about starting, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, and it became every time we turned around, every time we did a road program, the handicap ramps had to be redone and the cost was prohibitive. And at that point, council said, well, we're not going to charge the property owners to put in the handicap ramps. So, just want to make sure that everybody's still okay with that. It sounds like you are. Okay, now the next one, and it is the last section. This is council meeting to establish standards for when you have to repair or replace sidewalks, curbs, or driveway aprons. And let's not worry about who's paying for the curbs at this point. We're going to set that aside. But there was a memo that Michelle had sent around last year that I also included on share file where she had indicated what various other boroughs use as a determination of what would be, what would cause someone to have to do a repair. So the borough says you must repair this or replace this. And then based on that, sort of on the average, she made the following recommendations. So if we're talking about a sidewalk section or a driveway apron, that it would need to be replaced when the following. And right now, we don't have any of this in our ordinance, so this is new. So they would need to be replaced when the following conditions exist. The first being that greater than 25% of the section shows surface deterioration, which shall consist of an irregular surface with a depression of greater than a quarter inch in depth, or sections or portions of any section showing signs of active spalling and or flaking. Okay. The second reason that you might have to replace or repair a sidewalk or driveway apron would be that the section is out of vertical alignment by greater than an inch. But then there are ways that you can replace, repair it that, without having to put a whole new one in. And then cracks longer than 12 inches and wider than 1/2 inch at any point exist in any section. Does anybody have any concern about that or want to look, look at a different standard?
So these only, this doesn't apply to curb, right? This is sidewalk, apron,
or? This is sidewalks and driveway aprons.
Okay, because
so
it can be done independently. The problem with curbs is that you end up having to essentially dig up part of the street to be able to do it, so.
Well, right. Curbs come this next, Marv. It's the next question. Let's just talk about sidewalks and driveway aprons here, okay? This is just sidewalk and driveway apron. Okay.
I like this. Thank you, Michelle. Yeah.
It's good.
Was there a, I got a question.
Quantitative is good.
Okay. Well, this means that when somebody walks around and says, oh, that sidewalk is a mess, that we have something a little bit more objective to say, yep, you got a crack that's 12 inches long and it's 1/2 inch wide. This has got to be repaired. Okay. All right.
I think Bob had a question.
This doesn't apply to when you need to reset brick sidewalks, though, I guess. It's not so much that there are cracks or deterioration, it's just that they're all out of whack.
Right. I'm making a note to myself that we need to talk about brick sidewalks. We need to look into that.
Me too.
Okay. All right.
Wait. I got a question. If somebody had a water repair that they had to dig up the sidewalk and repaired it with asphalt, can we make them repair that?
They have to come back, Bob, and replace it with concrete.
Because we have that condition on State Street right now.
I know. That's supposed to be concrete. So like when we had a gas line put in, they dug up our sidewalk and put down blacktop, and then they came later and they dug up the asphalt or the blacktop and they put a concrete sidewalk in.
Michelle, we need to have the building inspector review the sidewalks.
Wait, we're talking about the ordinance. It's 10:31. I love you, Bob, but let's get back to the ordinance.
I'm falling asleep. Let's go.
All right. Thank you, Michelle. Yes. I think that's terrific. Everybody,
all right, we're that. Almost done, guys.
Okay. Wait, Julia. And I just, okay. People need to consider yes. Trees. We love our trees. Our trees are very important. With Tree Surgery SA, we've had a lot of conversations about how we value trees and how we want to keep them. We need to figure out what happens when the sidewalk requirements and the tree do not align, and what do we do? And I don't want to get into it now, but I do want to have some parameter and if you have this big beautiful tree and you want to keep it, but the tree pushes the sidewalk up, like which value wins, and or how do you compromise? So can we just note that we come back to that?
Yes, I made a note. Okay, so here's the other part. Here's the, any other condition that exists that creates a safety hazard in the opinion of the borough. That's the other. Mm-hmm. That's the more subjective one. Okay, now we're talking about curbs. Okay, let's not talk about who has to pay for it. But Julia, here are the objective.
Julia, sorry. Number four, I'm going to suggest that we decide who from the borough is going to make that determination. Is it going to be any borough council person who decides that? The code enforcement officer? The engineer? Let's just make a note.
I would suggest borough engineer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Me too.
Does anyone have any?
Yep.
Okay. Borough engineer. Okay. All right. So we'll be doing that also for the section on curb. Okay. So then this is curb replacement. This is a little bit, I got confused actually about this. So the first one is pretty much the same description as for the sidewalk in terms of surface deterioration. And the second one is pretty easy too. It's a section out of alignment greater than an inch. I guess so that means that one piece is lifted up versus the one next to it, but you could do something to repair it without having to replace it. And then we have the horizontal alignment greater than an inch. Again, there are ways to fix it. Now, Michelle, can you explain, because I got confused about this too, the cracks one in the section?
If there is a crack in a curb, it will have to be replaced unless you can saw cut it, use a saw and place basically an opening down that curb. So unless you could saw cut it, and that section of curb is not less than 4 feet. So curb sections are usually 10 feet in length. If your crack occurs at length 5 feet from a section, you could saw cut it and you won't have to replace it. However, if that crack is within 2 feet of the end or the beginning of that section, you will have to replace that section of curb.
Can you describe saw cutting? And I know taking a saw and I know cutting, but that sounds like it's gonna make smaller pieces, so.
No, it's just saw cutting it and creating a void, if you will, in that curb, and then you could put some expansion material in that opening.
Oh, okay, I see. So then you no longer have a cut because you filled it.
Correct.
Now, cracks of any size, you could have a little itty bitty tiny crack. Is that still violated? Like if you had a 2-inch crack, is that, that seems... Why would that be a problem?
That's what most municipalities go with because it probably because it is it deteriorates the curb. It no longer gives the road structural support. It's a point of weakness in the road. Those are some of the reasons why.
Is it in this section that it says that they have to replace in kind when they're doing the replacement?
By in kind, you mean the same material?
Yeah, the same. I'm just looking at, okay, so if I'm a person that has a large crack in my slate, not talking about me, but I might be, and I don't want my slate curves in the future, but I have to replace. I don't know. I'm just wondering if there's something like that where there needs to be a repair, it's dangerous. Do you have to replace it, or would you have the option to replace it with concrete if you wanted instead of the slate? Or that's probably in a whole different area.
So you're okay. Well, I'm going to make a note for this. This is curb replacement, right? You're talking about a slate curb, right?
Right.
Like, okay. So, and then questioning the in kind, because I know the way the current ordinance is written, there's some screwy language there, but we'll look at that.
Okay. Thank you.
Come back on that. Okay. And all right. And then number five is any condition that exists that creates a safety hazard. And I'm saying in the opinion of the borough engineer, that's okay with everybody. Yeah, good.
Julia?
Yes.
We haven't addressed damage to the Belgian block curbs.
Okay, but I'm gonna make a note on that too because we have brick sidewalks and then we have Belgian block. So I'm gonna put a note on here and I'll talk to Michelle and we'll look and see. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Now,
so, I'm sorry, go on.
Okay, do you have another question on this one? Because there's one more.
So if you have 25% of it with some spalling or a little crack, you now have to like call somebody and like dig up the road and remove like however many feet it goes down and replace your whole thing. And I mean, Michelle's the engineer, but it just like, it seems like a lot to ask of the property owners to say, you are now in violation of the ordinance because you have this like 1/2-inch crack or you have some spalling in your sidewalk. And then they would say it was because of the salt on the roads.
Or because
the fire truck backed up on it.
Right. Or snowfall.
So,
right.
Yeah. So it feels like very strict. And I'm not an engineer and this is why we're relying on you and it feels like, so if you have some spalling, but on the top, but the part that's connected to the road is totally fine and totally firm and you could repair the road and it's like so smooth, it's like butter.
But you have little crumbles on the top. Why should they have to replace it? And so there's that, and then literally the any size. I guess any size gets bigger, but should we at least give them a certain size? Like if you have any size, you could have a little itty bitty crack that's not doing anything, but now you're making them repair it or replace it now.
But you could saw cut. You could saw cut if it's a little bitty thing, unless it's too close to the edge of the 10-foot section.
That's a crack, but not spalling. What Tara's talking about.
But spalling,
those are my two concerns. One is the any size, because you could have a quarter inch crack and all of a sudden you're violating the ordinance and you have to like do all this stuff. Or, and the other the question is the spalling, and if the area by the road is fine, so you have some crumbles up top. But why is that an issue?
Again, I can look into and see what other municipalities are doing, but again, I believe it means that you have a structurally deficient curb. You are going to be repairing your road where curb is very important for that road. So if you're going to do a repair and replacement along that road, you should probably replace the curb at that time also, rather than waiting a couple years down the road when that spalling gets more and more evident.
So that makes sense. Now, how about when you're not going to replace the road and the road is fine, are we then going to tell a homeowner you've got to have somebody come and cut it all out and redo it because you have this little crack or some spalling? Or is this primarily for roads programs?
That's something the road committee and I have not talked about. If we're only doing base repair on a road and not a milling and overlaying it, are we going to require curb replacement?
Mm-hmm. Or if you're not doing anything at all, if you're not doing that road for who knows when, years, it's not even on the horizon, or maybe it's on the horizon for like 6 years from now, 5 years from now, does the homeowner have to have somebody come and excavate it and replace it?
Mm-hmm. Good question. So, good question for further discussion.
That might be a good, like, what do we make it do because we're doing the road versus what are you responsible? Because you look out, you know, you walk out and you go, wow, look at that crack in my curb, you know, better call the construction company.
Right.
Okay. I made a note.
All right.
Okay. One more question for council and then we're finished. The current ordinance requires repairs to be completed within 30 days after you've been notified. Michelle is recommending increasing that to 60 days. What does council prefer?
I guess I'd like
again,
to
know. That would only apply if you're talking about doing it outside of, you know, road, you know,
right,
road
right.
program. Because
right.
if so it's if in the road program, then it's in conjunction with the road program, regardless.
Well, Marv, this be like if your sidewalk is a mess and the engineer comes out and says that sidewalk has got to be repaired. Right now it says you have to do it in 30 days.
From a practical
is it reasonable to increase that to 60? Mm-hmm.
From a practical standpoint, you can't get contractors out and scheduled for repair within a 30-day period, unless it's
you can barely get a quote in 30 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you are speaking?
I was just going to ask Michelle why she's recommending the change. Are people having trouble getting it done in 30 days?
For just those reasons that Bob and Marv said, you could get your notice, you could be on vacation. If you do it during the summer months, contractors could be booked out for many, many weeks.
It's just a practical solution. It's not policy.
Nicole, were you going to say something?
I was just saying I agree definitely with the 60 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do as well.
Okay, 60 is good. All right. Okay, so you've raised a number of questions, and then we'll be working on the ordinance change, and that'll be coming before you as in a typical ordinance fashion that you'll draft, and we'll go from there. Okay, so just to give you a heads up on what's coming up with E-code, the only other big chapter we have ahead of us is taxation. And that is on the November 4th work session. I've already sent all the stuff to Valentina to start working on. And then we're also going to take a look on November 10th at the stormwater management ordinance, which, like the sidewalk ordinance, is being handled separately from E-code, but we're just going to get it going. So that's all I have.
All right. Thank you very much, Julia. Any old business? Any new business? Public to be heard.
Wait, I'm sorry. I forgot about something.
Oh, sorry.
I apologize.
Oh, sure.
I was looking for my notes and they're over on the table. I had to move. I was losing power. What's the status of the consultant, David Wolgum, I think?
Yes, he's coming in November. We need to establish the date.
Okay, good. Thanks. Sorry.
Thanks. Okay.
I just have a question. Any other business? I got a question for Julia. When we issue a permit and that permit goes in a window, is it supposed to have a date on it?
Should have a date that the permit was issued, I assume.
Issued? Because I've been walking around and the permits that are in the windows don't have any dates on them. So I can't tell whether the completion period is over or expired or whatever.
Well,
so I think we need to talk to Matt.
Well, we ought to find out. I don't know the answer to that, Bob, except to tell you that permits are good for 5 years.
Okay.
All right. Any other old business? And we had no new business? All right, public to be heard.
Hi, me briefly, Caroline. I have a work permit in front of me that was issued July of this year, just so you know. It says the date issued, and it also gives the permit expiration date, if that helps.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, sure. I'd like to thank Pat and Michelle for their prompt response to my inquiry today regarding the work that was being done on Green Street and the question I had about access to the driveway. So thanks very much for that. Will we be notified, or I guess I have a request in the future, if there's additional work taking place on Green, that we get notified in the event that we will have no access to the driveway?
I could say yes, you will.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And thank you all for your tremendous effort in the safe and proper operations here in Newtown Borough.
Carol,
it's greatly appreciated.
Caroline.
Yeah, sure.
The Green Street project is on the 2021 work list, but the scope of work hasn't been finally defined because we have that water issue. Okay.
Good to know.
The water flow. So we'll be back to you on that. Okay.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else? I think I need to get Caroline's headphones, whatever they are. So your voice sounds great. All right, we've got Warren and that's it. All right, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
I'm assuming there are no nays. Good night. Thank you all so much. We appreciate it.
Good night, all.
All right, bye-bye. Good night.